for a nomination from the committee for the
I nominate the whip of the committee, Mr. Kabat.
And do we have a second for that?
Yes, thanks. I wish to support the nomination of Honorable Fabaza.
Okay, then Mr. Kabat will be the acting chair, but you may take it in.
Education and the State Education and Department of Public Works. I also wish to greet our visitors, I guess. They are members of the media. Am I correct, Mr. Quebec there? You're not. But members of the public and whoever else is here. You're most welcome. Let me apologize up front for a late start. The chairperson, Honorable Paul Mashatile, is not available. He has a provincial commitment, and he has tendered his apology. I also want to apologize for the late start. We needed to have a forum in order to formally elect an acting chairperson for this issue. And now that we have the quorum, we can get the meeting going on. Members, I would like to, having welcomed all of you and indicated the apology of the chairperson, is there any other apology that I might not be aware of? Honorable Mbangwa is not here, he's tendered his apology. The minister, before that, the minister also has tendered his apology, Minister Mutsheha and Mr. M. Nabantu, Director General, Department of Public Works. I saw a hand.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Honorable Manana is on her way because of the country.
Okay.
And where she passes is far.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Honorable Chair.
Can I also show up the rule? Can we just look at the rule? Because there are certain minutes that have been uttered without apologies for a number of meetings. So I just like to look at any rules that deal with that.
Yeah, can we take that up probably after this meeting so that we don't delay the meeting? But you're raising a very point. Members, let's look at the agenda. I'd like to propose that item 3, consideration and adoption of committee meetings, be deferred to the item just shortly before 7, so that we have already delayed the two departments present here. We can't delay them further by taking on our own minutes. We can release them at that point when we finish the deliberation and then take on the minutes. Is that acceptable? Thank you. Can I then ask someone to move the adoption of the agenda? Honorable Mandopa.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I move that we accept the agenda as amended.
Seconder? Honourable Mark Lou. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I second the motion.
Thank you. Let's go straight to item number 4, the presentation by the Department of Basic Education. On the first quarter expenditure report on the 2014-15 financial year and the school's infrastructure backlog grant. Department, go ahead.
Thank you, Honorable Acting Chair.
Sorry,
I was going to say that maybe we should do introduction.
Yes. I was just about to say quite well.
Honorable Chair, I don't know whether you're going to start the committee or should we should start
the committee. I am Ndaba Twabaza, the whip of the committee.
I am Sheila Shobesitone, a member of this committee.
I am Lady Wemadoka from South Africa. I'm Bunga Manana, member of the
committee. I'm a complete member of the committee. Alan Austin, member of the committee.
I'm Minister Nyalongo, member of the committee.
Sorry, may I have to introduce myself to you particularly? My name is Annette Love, and I'm a member of the Basic Education Portfolio Committee.
Honourable member, can I? The member just introduced herself. Hello. Can you take a front seat so that the member and anyone else who is a member of the committee, Portfolio Committee of Parliament, find yourself a seat in the front, and okay, let's move to the department.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Perry Padiachi, Acting Director General, Basic Education. Before I ask my colleagues to introduce themselves. We'd also like to extend an apology for the Deputy Minister. We will send that in writing that he's in the Eastern Cape dealing with the matters that have arisen in the Port Elizabeth area. So that's why he could not be with us today.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. My name is Ndisa Mulelekwe. I'm the TFO in DBE.
Good morning, Honourable Members and the Chair. My name is Pulufele Diane. I'm the RCD Program Manager.
Good morning, Members. My name is Thembi Matunda. I'm RCD PSU.
Good morning, I'm Al Tikumbo from RCD PSU.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Lydia Bikwe from the Department of Public Works. I'm representing the Chief of Public Works. I'm responsible for special protest.
Good morning. My name is Joyce Mutsa. I'm the APD Project Manager from DBE.
Good morning. My name is Humair Vahid. I'm from the DBE PSU.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Onde Makandula. I'm member of the PSU, DBE.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Soli Mafoko from the DBE, responsible for physical resource planning.
Thank you. My name is Juan Mahatandi. I'm in the Office of the Director General.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Kosi Vilara, Public Works, responsible for infrastructure.
Good morning, Honourable Members and Chair. I'm Spencer Gennari. I'm from National Treasury, from Public Finance and National Treasury.
Chairperson, my name is Nico Murray. I'm from the National Treasury Parliamentary Office in Cape Town.
Good morning. I'm Dennis Pandit, Content Advisor for the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Member Gupta. Yeah, I met the tech, the Secretary of the Committee.
Good morning, members and officials. Karen Arons, Committee Secretary, Standing Montana Corporation.
Somebody who said he's an advisor to a portfolio committee, which one is that?
My apology, the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education.
Welcome, member. Can you introduce yourself?
Good morning, Jerry. I'm sorry that I'm late. I actually left myself behind. My name is Sheikh Imran. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
I'm Zanile Halil, Committee Secretary for the Committee.
Good morning, Honorable Members. Good morning to the Department. My name is Eva Maseo, Content Advisor to the Standing Committee on Appropriation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. DDG, go ahead.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We'll be making presentation in two parts. The CFO will do the presentation on the first quarter spending for the Department of Basic Education, and then we will we'll take direction from you on any questions, and the second presentation will deal with the school's infrastructure backlog grant. CFO.
Thank you, Honorable Chair Members. I'm going to present the first quarterly report as indicated. The department has an allocation of 19.608 billion, the total allocation, but this is for the national department. And of this budget, 14.267 billion is allocated for transfer payments, which means we don't send this part of the budget in the department, but to translate. And 30 million of this is for conditional grants. And we have various conditional grants in basic education, which is school nutrition, HIV and AIDS, in a lady schools grant, technical schools recapitalization, as well as OSG grants. And then we also have transfers to public entities. For the transfers to public entities, is the allocation for the Funza Lushaka bazaaries, which is transferred to the NSFAD. And then the other one is for Umalusi. Umalusi is a public entity of reporting to the Department of Basic Education. And we also have other transfers, which includes membership for UNESCO, IDEA, and so forth. The remainder of the budget, which is 5.412 billion, is allocated to compensation of employees, which is 315 million. Examiners and moderators, 19.546 million. Earmarked funds, I'll give the details of the earmarked funds later. And then the office accommodation, which is the building that we are occupying as a department, 158.81 million. Specifically and exclusively appropriated, this one is for the ACD program, which is 2.9 billion. And then what is left for departmental operations is 127.299 million. And in departmental products, we have 71.092 million. The actual expenditure for the department at the end of the first quarter is 6.011 billion. And this expenditure is made up of expenditure, the transfers that were made to conditional grants. We transferred 4.634 billion. And the transfers to public entities is 974. Now we remember that the allocation for the transfers to public entities is about 1 billion. But the bulk of it is transferred to NFRs, which is transferred once off at the beginning of the financial year for the bazaars. And then other transfers to it, we've transferred 24 million. The remainder of the expenditure, which is 377.732 million, is made up of compensation of employees, where we've paid 75.778 million. Examiners and moderators, 4 million. This one is, and then the next one, earmarked funds, 44.483 and so on. This allocation is broken into 5 programs in the Department of Basic Education. The first one is administration, which includes Ministry, Office of the DG, Office of the CFO, Human Resource, and Strategic Planning, Legal Services, and so forth. The expenditure for this program is 347 million. And expenditure at the end of the quarter is 88.76, which represents 25.6%. And then the second program is the Curriculum Policy Support and Monitoring. The allocation to the program is 1.954 billion. And this allocation is for programs such as workbooks, Karigude, which is a literacy program, and then other conditional grants like technical schools and Dinaledi schools grants. And then the expenditure at the end of the quarter is 154.269 million. We'll notice that expenditure is very low at the end of the first quarter, but it's because of how some of the programs are structured. For instance, the workbooks, we have just finished printing and workbooks are printed in two parts. We have a workbook one and workbook two. Workbook one is the one that is used from the beginning of the school year until June, and then the second workbook, it will be from July to the end of the year. So the first one has been printed, but the invoices have not been paid yet because they have to be payment and then they deliver to school. Then we start processing payments for those, and then afterwards workbook two is printed. But by the end of the financial year, we would have spent the money for the workbooks. And then the second one is the Karigude Literacy Program. That one is also about, it's about to start, but it normally takes 6 months or a certain number of hours in a cycle. So once the classes start, the payment will increase there. And then the third program is Teacher Education, Human Resource Development and Institutional Development. There we have an allocation of 1.268 billion, and expenditure is 1.09 billion. Now you see here the expenditure is too high for the first quarter, but this is where the allocation for the Funzalo Shaka is. So because we already transferred the full amount to Funzalo Shaka, it looks like there is an overexpenditure, but this is not the case. And then planning, information, and assessment. 10.379 billion. This is the biggest program in the department. But the biggest allocation is for ACIDI infrastructure grant. And then we also have education infrastructure grant. This one is we transfer to the provinces, and they also implement infrastructure in the provinces. But the other programs that are included in this program, we have exams, annual national assessments, AMIS and so forth. And then the last program is the education and enrichment services. The allocation there is 5.730 billion. Now in this program is where we have the school nutrition, HIV and AIDS, social cohesion, care and support, health promotion and other activities. Expenditure here also is 1.873 billion. But here we, the school nutrition, we transfer the money to the provinces. And that's where expenditure takes place. Now, if we indicate according to economic classification, compensation of employees, goods and services, and transfer. Now, you will call in the previous page. No, in the opening slide, compensation of employees was 300 million. Now here is 410. Now, the difference is because in some cases, there are earmarked funds that have compensation of employees. So we provide a different slide to show the total allocation per earmarked funds. But if we are to break down what we are paying with those earmarked funds, hence we have included that payment for compensation here. That's why it's a bit higher. So we have 414.738 million. Expenditure was 96.63. Goods and services, 2.065 billion. We spent 124, but against this item is where we also pay for things like.
Sorry to interrupt, Honorable Chairperson. Is this the clarification? The statement made was that the compensation of employees is 377 million on the previous budget. That's not what I see. I see that compensation of employees is 75 million. the total amount is 377 million. So I just need clarification on that, please.
Honorable Chair, 75 is the expenditure. That slide was expenditure. The one before that, it was the allocation of 315 million. The 377 is not for compensation, it's the total budget that is left for operations.
Honorable Chair, that's what I need there, and that's the correction. Thank you.
Okay.
I continue, Chair. The goods and services I was indicating that that is where we pay for workbooks, the ones that I indicated earlier. And then the transfers and subsidies, the breakdown you'll see in the later slides. And then payment for capital assets, this would be the payment for the RCD program. This is the breakdown of the previous slide, just giving more details of the breakdown here. Showing the compensation, examiners and moderators, transfers, public entities, other transfers, and so on. And the details of this slide, earmarked funds. We have the following earmarked funds in the department: Karigude, EPWT for Karigude, Workbooks, IQMS, NIDU, School Nutrition. Now, these allocations for earmarked funds are for specific purposes, so we cannot use them even if there's low spending on them. But we can get treasury approval to utilize the funding with good reason, of course. And then the conditional grants that we have in the department, we have the education infrastructure grant, which I indicated that is a transfer to provinces for implementation of infrastructure programs in provinces. And then we have the National School Nutrition Program, which is the feeding scheme. And then HIV and AIDS, which is the life skills education program. And then we have a Dinaledi Schools grant, OSD for therapists. This is a new grant. It only started in the current financial year. And then we have the technical schools recapitalization grant. And then transfer to public entities, as I indicated, is we have Funza Lushaka Bazaris as well as Umalus. And as you can see on the Funza Lushaka, it's 100%. It's the one I indicated that is the one for transfer to NSFAS. And then the other transfers that we have the ETDC transfer, UNESCO membership, IDEA South African, Childline South Africa, Guidance Counseling, National Education Collaboration Framework. Now, some of these membership fees, we only pay them towards the end of the financial year, hence we are showing zero spending on some of them. And then, on the cost containment measures, most of the cost containment measures that are implemented in the department most of them are in terms of the federal instruction that was issued on cost containment measures. The department adheres to what the National Treasury issued. As you can see, we book B plus vehicle, 1,300 accommodations, flights, economy class and so on. But we do try to also save in other areas. For instance, when traveling, we encourage our staff to share cars so that we don't go to the same place in many cars. No catering for internal meetings unless approved by the accounting officer. This would be meetings that may take the whole day and so forth. And in our department, we are lucky because we have the conference center. But we only use external venues where the groups are too big to fit into the existing venues. Otherwise, we use departmental conference center. And there's strict management of the usage of telephone in the department. Reduction of outsourced services. But in the department, we don't really use a lot of consultants, except where it's really necessary. Maybe in programs like RCD, where we need external capacity because the department was not structured to do infrastructure. And even the end function has been cancelled as it was requested in the treasury instruction. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
the Honorable Chair, I'm not sure if you want us to take any questions on the budget, and then you can go into the, when we refer to FED, we refer to the school infrastructure backlog, right?
Honorable Chair, I'm
just suggesting that we take questions on this one before we go to the next.
Let's deal with the questions, comments, member. Let me recognize that all of you who want to make Honorable Shoppes Tone, followed by Honorable Sheikh Nam, Honorable Sheikh, Honorable Masuflen, anyone else? Honorable Manana, all right. We'll take further hands as we go. Go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Jefferson. I just want to start with the last one. Let's use the telephone. I'm just a bit worried about this one, because you are a national department, and when you say strict use of telephone, does it not impede communication with the province? Because you see, we've got to be very careful that the measures that we take do not frustrate a communication with the provinces, because we've got problems with them. That is one. Two, you said something about the printing of workbooks. And you said monies are paid for the workbook. I just want to understand that, because I was taking it for granted that for the first half, books are already in school. And actually, for the second half, the books would be on their way to school or already at school. Because, you see, if we worry about money spent for workbooks and not worried about the timeliness of delivery of books, those books, they are useless. They are useless. You shouldn't even print them if they're that late. Because how do you expect the children to catch up? And I wouldn't like us to find ourselves in the same situation that we had to go while you guys hide. We had to go on the ground and explain to parents why books are not at school. I wouldn't like that situation. So I want us to be very clear on the print. Which books are we printing now? Are we printing next year's books or what? That is the last one is. No, I can deal with that later on. Let me see first.
Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh. First of all, I think, I don't know if there was an error when you mentioned the remainder of the budget is 5,400,000. It should be 5.4 billion, is it? On your introduction. Is that an error? So the remainder of the budget, 5,500,000,000 is allocated to the following. It's not 5,412,000,000.
Can I come in to explain? The way it's written on our member...
Sorry, can we a bit tell the member, ask the question, we will take notes, and then come back to explain.
Okay. I think you say the remainder of the budget is allocated to the following 5,412,759,000,000. And if you see a breakdown in terms of that, I would imagine that it should be really 5.4 billion. That's what it should be, the breakdown. That's my problem. The other concern that I have in terms of your nutrition program, in terms of schools, I'm a little bit concerned and worried about what the system that we're actually using in terms of the control system, of how you decide and on schools allocation for feeding schemes. Because there are schools that, in terms of the understanding of the department, that do not qualify. But what you find is more often than not, most learners that are attending these schools in these urban areas come from either rural areas or townships. And they are children that are disadvantaged. And as such, they come to schools hungry. There is no nutrition program for them in these schools. So I don't know whether one needs to actually look at the, look at that, because it's a serious concern for me. The other concern is the issue of the textbooks, because it would appear that, I think my colleague has covered a certain aspect of that. The concern is that more often than not, the textbooks are not reaching the learners on time. And as such, what is happening is that it is creating great difficulty on the teachers in trying to implement or trying to make progress. And my understanding in speaking to principals and teachers is that no matter how much they communicate to the department, you know, they're always getting these answers. It's coming with auditors. Now, I was told that there is some system that we are supposed to be putting in place, a computerized system which should be able to track books from the time it is ordered to exactly where it is, when it is going to be delivered. At any given time, one is going to be able to go onto an IT system to be able to see exactly what progress is and where they are at any given time in order to try and prevent that problem. The other thing that I'm very, very much concerned about, I notice, in terms of education, is a lot of emphasis, I know, is being paid on the payment of salaries to teachers and things. My concern is, how much of time do a lot of these teachers spend in these schools? In light of the fact that a lot of these teachers are counselors and mayors and deputy mayors and never at the school. So we're paying them there, but we're also paying them in big pay choice, but they are not in justice to the schools. And that is what my concern is. What are we going to do in the future in terms of that, in order to be able to improve the quality of education for our learning? And finally, in terms of the infrastructure, would like to know, especially in the Eastern Cape, where I've been told that we are making changes.
Hang in there, honorable member. Infrastructure is coming as the next item. We will deal with it in detail when we get
to okay.
Thanks, honorable chairperson. Just two issues I would like to raise from my side. Obviously, there's a lot of figures here, and these figures tell a story. We know that with all the money that has been spent, there is still problems. I mean, the bench that the 15 ministers aren't even okay. So, my concern, and what I would like to see, and I won't be able to see sitting in this room, is where this money is actually being spent. Now, furthermore, the Department of Education does have a history of overspending in certain departments and underspending. I mean, that happened last year. I think there's an amount that was mentioned of about 700 million. So, and it isn't being indicated yet that there are some areas where it's underspending and overspending. So, I just would like to get the assurance from this department, because we are told that the money will be spent and there won't be any overspending in certain areas, if that is the case, because it's been going on for a while now that these reports have been coming. That's the one issue, the overspending in some areas and underspending. And the other issue that is of concern to me, and I don't think it's the problem that emanates from this department, but it's the next MSF loan. It seems as though it gets paid from the department, but the time it gets to the recipients or the beneficiaries, that seems to be where the problem is, because sometimes they only get it middle of the year or in the second half of the year. So as far as they're concerned, there's a substantial amount of money being paid, but the beneficiaries receive it in time. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Just a couple of issues. I know that the budget we're discussing here is a budget that came into being before the committee came into being, so it's only happened before we got here. So there are things in here that obviously we had no sight of before it got to you and before you started allocating it and doing what you're doing with it. But it did seem to me a large concern when I look at the final appropriation on your slide for the allocation going to actually spend it for a program, that the allocation for planning information assessment is 10 billion rands. And yet, that's the biggest single item here. I would like to see a table that shows us how much of the money is spent on actual education, because it seems to me that the largest part of the money is going on peripheral items. It's not being spent on the
can I call it, the prime objective of your department, educating people. Your core business is not being addressed, from what I can see here. The money is going elsewhere. And I suspect that it's going to consultants in many instances. It's going on things that aren't actually producing the results we'd like to see. My second issue is, you mentioned about non-payment of invoices, and that's why the figures are somewhat down. You know that it is the national intention to pay invoices on 30 days. Are you achieving that in any way? How old are these invoices that are unpaid? Can we get an idea of that? I would also like to have some information about what are departmental operations and projects. Do they actually address your core business, or are they things peripheral to that? We aren't given any particular detail on that. Again, you indicate that actual expenditure, as now for the first quarter on goods and services, is only 6%. I'm just wondering about why is that so low at this point in time. This is when you indicated where most of the spend comes at the end of the year. I would imagine goods and services are an ongoing thing throughout the year. Surely it should be somewhere around the 25% mark, not the 6% at this point in time. The same apply for payment for capital assets, although I can understand that you place an order now and it goes through a process of tendering and all the rest, so I can understand that perhaps only happens at 30 days once the whole process has been gone through. But for the goods and services, I'd like an explanation, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So first, please let me apologize for the late. They welcome the presentation from the Department of Education. I have 2 to 3 questions that I would like to pose. The first one, unfortunately, there are no number of pages here, so I presume the introduction is one. 2, the third question with regards to the 80% time form that was spent from the teacher's education mental health. What I wanted to find out, what was the projection for this program for the first quarter? As of now, we are already spending more than is in three-quarters of the budget that was budgeted. The second issue with regards to the accrual. Is this the first quarter used to pay also accrual, or you didn't have any from the previous financial year? The issue of the goods and services in raised. We really need a clarification with what is happening and what was the projection for this. Thank you very much.
Okay. Just a few things that I would like to raise myself. First, on the cost containment, the two last pages. One appreciates just in addition to the different items you mentioned there, an indication of how much you are able to save on each of those items per quarter, and of course that would build up to the full financial year. As it stands now, it's information, but it is not talking to the specific savings. One would appreciate that. Perhaps the next time we meet, it might be good to have an indication there. I do want to comment about the workbooks as well. You just said that you delivered the workbook one, which you do up to June. I suppose that's the workbook one that works from the beginning of the financial year up to June, and workbook two that off from the beginning of the second half of the year up to the end of the year. If that is my understanding, then one of the worries, if you're saying we are in September and the second book is not produced, delivered yet, perhaps if you could get a clearer explanation thereon. The subscription paid at the end of the year, Why so, not the beginning of the year? Because it suggests that for the whole year you remember not in good standing, and then at the end of the year, just before you become a member not in good standing again, you get. So if we could get a clarification there. The NSF fund paid from DPE instead of Department of Education Training budget. Why is that so? And lastly, we see your budget and your expenditure for the first quarter. We are not seeing your predetermined target, whether you are getting there. You have spent, but we are not seeing the predetermined target, so that we are clarified that you are spending accordingly, and so on. So those are some of the areas that we think need to clarify. I don't know whether the member from the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, ma'am, if you could remind me your name again.
Lovemore.
You want to raise a question? You are free to do so. If you are not on this. Okay. Thank you. Department, if you could respond.
Yes, ma'am.
Sorry? Just before that, Honorable Madova.
Honorable Chair. No, thank you for presenting, Chair. I think you have covered me on the last one. If you can for the department. That we are not making comparisons, even when we are contributing to this report, because we are not sure whether they really implementing what they really plan for. But also on the issue of the workbook, I think we are having a concern for it, all of us. On Friday, we are having the stakeholders meeting in the area where I come from, in my province. One of the educators complaining about the shortage of workbooks in Mfatangelwa school. They were saying that even though that they report that when they are being delivered, they are not enough. They deliver short. If 100, maybe they come with 50. She was indicating in different classes that she's teaching, to say that some of the two classes are without workbooks and so on. And it is a concern, even in this time, the workbook is still a challenge in the department. Maybe when also the department is delivering those workbooks to the school, they must really make an oversight role to the service provider. Because when they delivered short workbooks in the school. They were raising it with the MEC, we're calling all the stakeholders and the school governing bodies, because we are concerned about the education of our children. And I think the department needs to pull up thoughts around this particular matter. And also, Honorable Chair, maybe if the department can share with us other transfers, what does that mean, other transfers? Because our responsibility is to do oversight. If it's other transfers, we don't know where it's going to. And we are the standing committee that appropriates funds or budget to the department. But if we talk about others and we can't follow up, where is that particular transfer going to? On the issue of the payment for capital assets, we also see that it shows like 5.4%. I'm covered on the 6% goods and services, because I think if the goods and services are procuring like 6% at this time, it means to say that there will be under expenditure in most of the areas that we have budgeted for. Because if we say 6% goods and services, those goods and services are supposed to be implementing the process, you know, they using. And this payment for capital assets, which is 5.4%. I think my colleague has raised it to say, can you indicate the issue of payment, whether it's 30 days, are you adhering to 30 days or going there? Because if you see, as the first part, there's only 5% giving on the capital payment, it shows that we are going to have a problem around the issue of delivery. But because the chair says that we'll be dealing with the issue of the backlog in the school's infrastructure, they will contribute more than in the school infrastructure. Thank you.
Chairperson, I come from Bushbuckridge, Akonok, and I've got two children that I'm looking after. They are not my children, they just came to stay with me. So every weekend I want to see what they are doing. They tell me that there are no books. And they also tell me that they are actually tired of going to those schools because the teachers in those schools, they go to drink. And time and again, the principal has to go and fetch them from drinking, and they come into the class drunk. So the children were asking if I could move them to some other school because they are small, but they see that there's no future for them. And I want to ask you, is it not the fault of this department that maybe the teachers find that they must just go to drink because they have no material to teach? And the children have nothing to, so they get bored in the classroom. You know, this is a very, it hurts me. I don't sleep because of that. Because it's a lot of children in Akonok, and I don't expect any answer from you for that. I really ask Chair that they respond to me in writing after they have visited the Akonok area, because it's serious. It's very serious. If I can have a reply after some time, in writing.
Yes, let's include the specific question raised by Honorable Mandor on that particular school, because you may not necessarily have information of her now. If you could get time to have make contact with those two areas and then perhaps respond once you have that kind of information. Honorable Shakim.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. There's just one thing out of the intent of the answers. I wanted to know if you have got any system with whatever money you've allocated to check output, if you've given this allocation to 500 or 2,000 children. Do you ever do a follow-up after that to find out where they have ended up? Where have they gone from that stage? Now, we encourage this, which is a very good thing. There are a lot of underprivileged children. But my concern is when you give that, we just give, do we stop or do we continue to follow it up to see where they are going? You are going to the next level? Are they going to that tertiary level? Are they being successful? Or are they just dropping off after the first year and the second year? That's what my concern is. I don't know if you've got some kind of a system to monitor that and see the allocations that are given, whether there is some report that can be at some stage to see where we are going in terms of that. Thank you.
Honorable Nyalung.
Thank you, sir. Mine is on Zinaledi School. I just want to check how many Zinaledi schools we have in the country and where are they? If I can get those topics that are in product when doing oversight. That one, maybe there is one in Bumalanga where I am, and then I will oversee. And then also the issue of the critical school. How are these provinces performing on the technical school? The department is he analyzes the. Is the province, is this the department analyzes the technical schools? And then which provinces are these technical secondary schools? Let me take the provinces where we can do this. Thank you.
Department, can you respond?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will start and I'll try to cover the majority of questions. I think one comment indicates, I think the budget did indicate that operationally there's 127 million for the department and another 70 million which we refer to projects. The other, I think the Honorable Lakmore would have, maybe we should have invited the standing committee as well to our workshop and there's some of the details sitting like this, the time doesn't allow, but because even beyond the questions, there would be other details we could share with you. But to start with the questions that have been asked, on the telephone, I think in the public service there is a policy, but the department also has enforced limits in terms of which calls can be made, but not to the detriment of impeding service delivery, in that there are procedures that if people exceed those limits, there needs to be a motivation and an explanation. And a further instance of a DDD that, because of the request on the minister to do additional work, exceeded the limit so that the accounting officer can be approved. So I think we can assure you, but I think we do need those limits to ensure that there is not abuse. But we do not, in certain instances in the examinations, there are calls that are made because there are people that are brought to the department to clear papers and so forth. But they have to explain why they've gone above the limit. And this is then sent to administration, so it's open for the AG to audit us if necessary in those areas, if we are abusing it. Again, let me, I think the workbooks have been referred to a number of times by the honorable members, so I'm covering a number of questions in that regard. The reference to the amounts we're talking are for the 2014-15 year. We've already delivered books for 2014 year before schools had opened. And what we do have in references to the shortages and so forth is what we call a top-up or a mop-up. A top-up would be that we may have delivered 100 books and the school now has 105, so we have to then provide five. Five more, so it's because five children came in after the data that was provided by the province and the principal had been given for that particular year. So that funding for the 2014 year of the workbook, book one and two, would have been paid for from the previous year. It can be some, we may have to pay the service provider something because they had gone and delivered some of these books just as financially ended, so it may go into the news, but it cannot be that it consumes all the money. So in my book, and as accounting officer, I think we've basically wrapped up expenses for the 2013-14 year in terms of that delivery. So we have shortages, and there are systems in place where they can call the call center, they can send SMSs and emails, and these will be delivered. Whether it's 5 books, whether it's 100 books, if it's 1,000, there needs to be an investigation because it means the service provider may not have given us all in. Also, when the book is delivered, there has to be what we call a PDO, which is a proof of delivery, which has to be signed by those that receive it at the school and it's returned. If a service provider doesn't provide that, they do not get paid for it. And just to start on the 30 days, basically, the Forum for DDs in the residency has a number of actions that the department have to follow, and one of those is to improve the 30 days. Basically, the department meets that nearly every month. I've seen once or twice we've had one or two late payments, maybe 14,000 rand, 7,000. Maybe due to the fact that all information was not provided. But not to the levels of tens of thousands or millions, I think the CFO will confirm that. We can provide that evidence that in terms of receiving an invoice, if it meets all the criteria for payment, it will be done inside 30 days. So the workbook that we're talking about is the workbooks for 2015. They were printed in May, June. They're actually in delivery. Workbook 1 is already in delivery. Workbook 2 will commence. In fact, by the end of November, we should have delivered all workbooks to schools. It will not be in the hands of children, but when schools open in January, workbook 1 will be available for them to basically utilize in terms of what we have. We will have a situation where there will be shortages. There will be what we call the top-up. The mop-up is if the book, in some instances, they may have got, it's in a language, it may be isiXhosa and it's supposed to be in isiZulu, and that can be given to us. There's even instances where the enrollment has dropped, so school has a surplus. We could, we even take that back so that we can give it to where it is. And we've got people on the ground now in provinces, and this is done from the DDE. It's not a province that you will go to get the shortage covered and so forth. The province can report to us to assist, but it's DDE that basically manages this. And then by the end of December, all the service provider would receive, in terms of the contract, certain payments as they do the deliverables. But as we get to December, the bulk of the contract is approximately just under 800 million, would then be paid off. Obviously, we will hold a certain amount, so that the service provider doesn't get paid. But once you pay and you want the service, you will have a difficulty in getting that. So we do hold back a last 10 or 20% back before we finalize the payments. So that's on the workbooks 1 and 2 for 2015. So we're on track to do that and to deliver. And basically our delivery is 99%. There are some issues with workbooks in terms of the utilization. In that what we found in terms of this studies that we've looked at is that it has made a difference. Where there's no textbook, the workbook does help, and where it's utilized, it basically means in terms of the curriculum, it does help children in that regard. But we found that in some schools it's not utilized. Others, these books are to be taken home by children, and at the end of the day, we do not take it back. So it's basically their own copy, in particular in the poor communities, where this may be the only form of a book that they may have at home. So that is an issue that we still have to address with teachers and principals as well, who basically lock them up and keep them into the cupboard. So the workbook, I think, and how it's paid and so forth, I think I've addressed that. I think with reference to the 5.4 billion, I think it's quite 5.4 billion, which is also the correct way. It's also 5,412 million as well. But it also can be said as 5.4. With regard to the nutrition scheme, basically, that's approximately also 5 billion. All schools have 1 to 3 schools are basically part of the feeding scheme, even if they are primary or secondary. Something which even was raised yesterday in the portfolio committee, that you have schools in Quintile 4, the learners that want to, and there are some problems that want to extend beyond, and there is an argument to be made that even in a quintile type school, there are learners who are coming from homes where they are not getting meals. However, the grant is of a particular amount which can feed only a certain number of learners. In fact, we have a brief now to look at how we can feed, not just on Monday to Friday, but also on a Saturday. But the grant itself will not be able to do that. And the fiscal environment we are in, we're not likely to get any additional funds. And the menus that are set for the nutrition scheme on, it basically some meals are under 5 rand at the end of the day. It's around 3 rand and so forth. So in the discussions that the minister has given with the MECs and the Council of Education Ministers, is to look at how, where there is schooling that's occurring on Saturday in terms of maybe an extra class or a winter class, how the feeding scheme could be extended. Because what you do have is some provinces do feed, but they feed as if at the rate at which you know, departments usually cater for their own internal meetings, external meetings. And if the grant itself, the nutrition team could be extended to the Saturday, you could have massive savings and you could even expand. So the issue about is not the merit of the child getting the food, it's to get the funding and to extend it. And to stretch the rand that we have, the procedure encouraged is that the funds be given to the school, and the parents at the school would form a co-op and so forth and do the feeding instead of having big companies that would get a tender, and at the end of the day there's no guarantee that you're getting value for money, and secondly that you don't have the meal being delivered on time and where it's a hot meal. But what you can say that through the majority of provinces have basically followed the route of giving the funds to the school and managing it through that, so that you'll find that a nutritious meal can be provided, especially a hot one. On the issue of textbooks, the department doesn't have any funds in the budget that it provides in terms of textbooks. It's basically in the budget of provincial departments. But the department monitors that, and basically in terms of the new administration and the goals, and even in the old, we had the goal to ensure that there's one textbook per child, per grade, per subject, which we're working towards. In that regard, we monitor the department. However, is the one that sets up screening of the books in terms of the catalogs. And that has been reduced from about 8 to about 3. The discussion is to have textbooks, the core textbook, in terms of trying to reduce the cost of textbooks as well. But on the other hand, the department does get involved in partnerships with, for example, the Shuttleworth Foundation or CESOR, where we've got grade 12 mathematics books which are basically sponsored by these institutions, and we then basically get sponsorship from private sector to ensure that we can provide this. So that's in to complement what the provinces are doing, and in order to ensure that we are able to get to that target sooner than later. But the delivery of textbooks is basically at provincial level. We monitor that. There again, there is a plan, LTSM plan to deliver. Provinces are not always on target, but before the schools close, that should happen. But clearly, not all learners are being provided with one textbook per subject per grade presently. There are also issues about, it's true about, we're looking into the issue of a tracking system and the cost involved as well as how it gets implemented. And it also goes in with, together with a retrieval system, that we cannot be printing books for 12 million learners each year and it goes and it doesn't come back. But, that's also a key that we're trying to address at the end of the day. I think with regard to the issue of teachers spending, I think the President has raised that in his honor over a number of years, and something that is being addressed, being looked at. But with regard to councillors and mayors, the Department of Public Service Administration has issued regulations in that regard, and the number, and that there's certain instances they have to resign. So if they're still having these two jobs, I think we'd look into that, but we need to follow those regulations if we're not to, not already doing that. I think in the, if you're looking at, I think I've covered, we talked of, referred to underspending, overspending. In this particular department, we've not really overspent overall in the budget. We've underspent in the main, in, but we'll get to that in infrastructure, and maybe in an accounting definition, we've underspent on the schools infrastructure backlog grant, and that would be the major amount in that regard. On the workbooks in past years, it could be interpreted that there was a underspending, but actually it was a saving in the manner of how the procurement was done, as well as that the books were developed internally by teams the department had set up. So in terms of the funds allocated by Treasury, we basically were able to utilize less and still achieve, produce all the books that we needed to, and then we were allowed then by Treasury to utilize that in other curriculum initiatives. On the last part, basically what this department is referring, is dealing with is the frontal shaka battery, which is specifically to produce educators. And this is then allocated, which we then translate to the NASPAS to basically administer on our behalf. But the selections of the applicants are done by the higher education institutions, and the department has a team or a director that looks into working with the higher education institutions across the country in all provinces. So it's not the NASPAS across the manner, that in the main resides with the Department of Higher Education and Training. Although we do work with higher education and training in terms of some issues that do result a few years back regarding how the payment would happen and so forth. But we do not really have delays in terms of payment because we've been in discussion with NASPAS regarding that, even to the extent of providing an advance to a learner. There are issues related to, we can provide details that we track these learners because it could probably be over a four-year period that they'll take to complete their qualification. In fact, last year, at the beginning of this year, that 2013 graduates, we had over 3,400 graduating through that. That's not really the 100% that may have got the bursary at the beginning. And then there's placement of these across. We basically placed the majority of them, and 1,200 were still to be placed. That's an issue the Minister and the Deputy Minister has placed, that it needs to be raised to 100%, because government has invested money in producing these teachers, and there's a need for teachers in this thing. So I think we shared our plans with our portfolio committee as to how to deal with that, that even by the end of this October, there will be provisional placements. And if they do qualify, then when it comes to January, they would basically have a post. And where provinces cannot place, we would then move those successful graduates to other provinces that may need teachers. Like, for example, in the Western Cape, who are not, have some learners that cannot be, graduates that cannot be placed to a province like KZN, which is in need of teachers. So that's like the follow-up. The other is to check the issue that was raised about the Sunzaiker, when you enroll the learner in the bursary, you anticipate they're going to be teaching mathematics and maybe physical science, but when they come out somewhere in 4 years, they've changed to maybe one of the languages and so forth, that it should be tighter control on those methods. So those are the things that in trying to improve and quality of what we get from there, we're looking at. In reference to the 10 billion in the planning, information, and monitoring, approximately, the CFO will correct me, 5 billion of that, I think, is transferred to the provinces for the education infrastructure fund, and then 2.9 billion is the CD. And so there's a credit sum of the transfers, so it's not necessarily that it's something that the department is has to hold back, but in terms of the infrastructure, grant to provinces, we still need to monitor and see that the spending is in terms of their plans that they provide to the department and national treasury. In certain instances, we even withhold those payments. I think the CFO will go into the detail of what are the operational and let me touch on that. What are the operational and core objectives? The department basically has no schools under its jurisdiction. The schools belong to provinces, but in certain instances, basically what we are doing, the key focus is around the curriculum, and that will be the program in which we would get. We'd work with provinces and through provinces. And even now, even though we have received this budget, with the minister and the deputy minister in the appointments, we just refer to them as new ministers with a new mandate. There are certain activities that are being said to be re-looked at. If they're not part of the core mandate of the department, we need to look at stopping them. If they're not making a difference to, as the honorable member said, to education itself. So that's in progress, and that in main it should be program two that you're looking at delivering. Like, for example, it would be the introduction of African languages in schools, the issue of first grade, even special needs, which has received the funding in the past, but these are funding that is in provincial budgets. But I think that it would be the areas that we're looking at, and in some areas there is no funding actually to run that at the moment, so we need to look at reprioritizing some of the budgets of other programs. I think I've dealt with that 80.4%, is that it will not lead to over expenditure in that program for itself. Is that the bulk of the money in that program is for the Funza Lushaka. There can be an overspending because in terms of the operations of that branch itself, there could be activities that could take it over, but that would have to be approved, the activities would be approved by the accounting officer. At this stage, the work that they are doing is with other partners outside the department like Vodacom and so forth, and the British Council, which is covering the cost of some of the work. The CFO will cover the issue of accruals. I think, Honorable Chair, we will provide you with information regarding the cost containment in terms of the program that was listed in the last two slides. And I think we can in writing provide you the predetermined targets as well, so you can make a comparison. We apologize for that oversight. Hand over to the CFO, and if she's left out something, I'll come back.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Member. The question on operations and the project. The operations are for monitoring progress of the department, developing policies, and monitoring, as I indicated, but through even things like your telephone travel and so forth. And then for projects, there are specific projects that find that the department is engaged in. Let's, for example, there could be a project where curriculum is developing, let's say, a policy, and they have to consult stakeholders and all the other activities that need to go with that project. We classify it as a project so that we can follow that the project or the activity has been done and it has been completed, and we classify it as a project. And then for operations, it's for telephones and other things. But maybe to add on the telephones, I know the ACDG explained that, but the amount that is limited for telephones is the personal telephone cost, not the operational part of it. The operational staff is allowed to do those calls. They're not limited on that one. So if you exceed the limit on the private calls, then that you have to explain why you are exceeding on private calls. Accruals, it is correct that if the accruals were paid in the first quarter. However, we did not have too many accruals in the department except maybe for the infrastructure. So we do pay all accruals in the first quarter, but we also pay for new activities that have already started in the new year. And then the membership, this one we are not paying late. We receive invoices from the various organizations. And normally, when we get invoices, let's say in December, for 2015, we are going to get the invoice in December, and then we pay in December, January, depending when it reaches us, because they are coming from various countries for those memberships. So we never pay late for membership. Other transfers, there was a question on other transfers. They are indicated on the slides that I've just put up. Other transfers are for those memberships, UNESCO, IGEA, and then for Child Time South Africa, Guidance Counseling, and the National Education Collaboration Framework. Maybe the acting DG would explain more on the National Education Collaboration Framework. And for payments, we do pay within 30 days. Maybe for infrastructure, it might look like we are underspending at the moment, but what happens is that we give our implementing agents a small advance so that we don't delay construction of schools. So they pay the contractors immediately when payment becomes due to the contractors. But they delay in giving us invoices to extend them. Because remember, when we transfer, we give them an advance to pay the contractors. We reflect it under the advance account. So we can't show you that expenditure in our books. But only when we receive the invoices do we then generalize to expenditure. But it doesn't have an effect on the 30 days because it's already paid to the contractors. I think I've covered the questions that I can do.
I think, Honorable Chair, we've covered the question just briefly about the National Education Collaboration Framework, which is in the budget. But it's referred to as the National Education Collaboration Trust, which is made up of the department together with the private sector, in particular business, in order to make education a societal matter, in particular with the business community. And this is being promoted by the president, and the deputy president is a patron of the trust. This is the allocation for the functioning of the trust for the 2014-15 year, in which both the business and government will make a contribution in order to take advance the goals that we set out. So I think we can, it's quite interesting work that's been done, in particular in 8 underperforming districts at the present moment in 5 provinces, and some of the good best practices that are coming out of it will be upscaled by the department and provincial education department in the remaining districts in the country as well. So it's something that we can look out to. It is part of the NCSF as well, and has come out of the National Development Plan. I think I didn't cover the junior lady schools. To indicate that the junior lady schools are 500 schools, we will provide that information, but just to indicate that we are in discussion with National Treasury arising from the discussion at the Council of Education Ministers to look at reconceptualizing the grant, that this term would be a major focus on mathematics, science, and technology, and in order to refocus the grant on all schools in terms of maths and science, and that the 500 schools would then support the remaining schools in that regard. So the funding would not be limited to just those schools we categorize as generally. The grant should be renamed the Math, Science, and Technology Grant. And there were also proposals about the technical schools, but we can provide the list of those 200 schools. It's across all provinces as well, and there's also proposals on How to Sharpen the Technical Schools grant, including the HIV and AIDS Life Skills grant, which the proposal is to have it as a care and support grant while it covers HIV and AIDS as well as TB. There would be other areas of care and support for the, to deal with the health of the learner that the minister has identified that could be part of the grant. And that's work that's in progress, if agreed to, would be for the 2015-16. And I think on the bush park, which if you can get the names of the schools, not just we will make a visit to the district, but we can also look at the school that we, or schools that are being referred to. And we will provide not just we provide a response in writing as well long before we come back to the committee.
Chairperson, in any democracy in this globe, once the head of state has made a pronouncement, all of us must follow. President Zuma has required every one of us to make a radical change, economic change. And I believe economic change can only materialize if education is correct. So this is the call. That is why we fund it. And I also want to remind ourselves that South Africa is a unitary state, not a federal state. In Chapter 3 of the Constitution, there is a section that says all spheres of government shall conduct their business in a manner that does not divide the Republic of South Africa. And I don't like to hear this thing of its provinces, because you see, we are not a portfolio committee on education. We are appropriation. And when we actually made appropriations, we didn't have provinces here. We had yourself. And we actually appropriated, trusting that every rand you are going to follow. Every rand that we appropriate. It may not have been in the fourth parliament, but in this parliament, with this collective, we want to make sure that we appropriate the scarce resources of the state to departments that will monitor the implementation and follow the results. That is what we want, the results. So we don't want these eyes, you know, this waking of departments, it's so. We don't want that story. We pass this budget as a vote for a department of education. How am I going to look after it? That is your business. And you see, when these things backfire, when the communities are up in arms, it's only a poor mother who is on the face. You all hide away. I don't see your faces there. She has got to be on TV alone. They don't ask the provinces. I've never heard them calling the MEPs for provinces. They just call the minister. Yes, in this parliament, this parliament, we want you to account for every land because you got it from us. And now I understand why my friend C did not support me so much. Maybe it was because of this. So you must move in a manner that will get everybody supporting the budget. Please.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think my colleague has covered me, because my understanding is that whatever you even if you delegate, you will never delegate the responsibility, but you delegate a task, which means that the responsibility still lies with you, you see. So when you come here and then and want to get answers and you refer to the provinces, really, because we are the center, we are talking to the center. So we are expected to get answers. There is no way that we will call any department here and when we want others, they refer somewhere else, you know. Because it means to say that there is no need to call this department. We must call the provinces, each and every province. I think the center must hold. Because the colleague is indicating that when we approach, you must understand, because we asked the question to say that
if there is a cell phone that is ringing, please attend to it so that it does not disturb the microphone. Yeah,
because we will ask the question whether this department, is there a need to increase even the price for 60 per year if they don't send? And they refer us somewhere else if we are questioning. I want to say that, Honorable Chair, that around the issue of the leading scheme, ultimately our oversight role is even in our constituencies. We call our constituencies to hear what is happening on the ground. As I'm saying that Friday, last Friday, we're having, you know, the stakeholders forum. Everybody was there, parents, principal, you name them. They were part of our school council bodies. And the issue of the feeding scheme is a problem also. They indicated that it is on and off because the service providers are not getting paid on time. I'm emphasizing on what the colleague was saying, that 30 days that the president said the contractors must be paid when they submitted their invoice on time. They are saying that this feeding scheme is on and off. They first said that a parent that stood up. We appreciate that our government have tried to intervene in the poverty that we are having in communities and families to give us a nutrition or feeding scheme at school. But they are having a challenge because the service providers, sometimes the kids can't say we did not eat, the service providers are not paid on time. I think it's something that you need to really focus on, because if they are not paid on time, it's a problem. Yeah. It's practical what I'm saying. It was the guy, Mr. Nene, at Mtengini School. They were saying it was on and off. We are not rising. We are on the ground, and we are monitoring. We are seeing whether the money that we are appropriating as the Standing Committee on Appropriation is really bearing fruit on the ground. So it's a challenge. I think something that for, because even the director went to us said, hey, yes, it's true. This challenge of not paying on time the service providers is working on us, all of us, because they come to us, they flow on us, we are having a problem. And I know that also once the Auditor General in 2011 did say that the challenge of the department, they are not doing their oversight role, they leave it to the provinces. So if you do like that, we'll look at the way and see whether it is still appropriate for us to appropriate such funds that we give to the department. Because I'm not sure whether that one has been corrected of not monitoring the provinces. Because if you are not following the money that you are giving to the provinces, you know, we're going to follow you. Thank you.
I see Honorable Manana and Honorable Shekha. Honorable McLaughlin. And Honorable Sheikh, Honorable Nalongo, all follow-up questions. Yes, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I compare with my colleagues here that the department needs to do oversight for the problem.
There are really serious problems if we're not doing that. And the provinces are complaining that you hold the money, and when it's towards the end of the financial year, dump the money to them, and they don't know what to do. Yes, we're talking from experience. Towards the end of the financial year, if you can see workshops that are conducted for the sake of spending the money, it's very amazing. And the overcharging of things, that is where it's taking place. I know these catering things, teachers are being called, the workshop, and so on. And this needs to come to an end, because really, the money that we have, it's very limited. The accruals that I talked about, if we can get a report, how much you are having for this accrual, and all of those accruals are already paid as of now, or
I heard that we are paying 30 days. Always department are saying we are sticking to the 30 days, but in reality, it's not like that. Thank you very much.
Honorable Sheikh Ma.
Thank you, Chair. I want you to know that all new schools that are being built, are we providing them with the same education that they've had over a period of years, or we are trying now to ensure that those new schools get quality education in terms of a laboratory, in terms of computers, are they fully equipped, or are they just being built as ordinary schools just for the purposes of having a school in a particular area? So I want to know if we are now making sure that these schools that we are building are quality schools that will give the learners quality education. At the same time, I'm also saying that we must maintain and improve those that are not providing quality education. So I just wanted to know on those new ones whether we are doing anything different to what we've been doing with the other schools.
Thank you. There's a few issues that I would like to give study with the private course. I'm a little alarmed that they are private course. For me, the limit on private course should be zero. There should be private course up. As far as I'm concerned, the other issue is, and I'm hoping that we don't pay tenants on this one, CFO, is the books, workbooks that are delivered. You mentioned that you wait for the invoices to record it. I'm sure once the goods are delivered, you can record it by way of using the delivery notes so that you get a more accurate picture of what the actual position is. So that is another way of recording it, which is permissible in terms of generally accepted accounting principles. The further to books and the workbook, I know I went to school in the last millennium, so it was a different system that was used then. Some of those books used to last more than 10 years. And as I said, I know there's a new system, but surely there should be a system devised where those books should not go with the learners and rather be kept in the system and in doing so saving substantial costs. So I think that is something that needs to be looked at. Again, dealing with the books, you mentioned the fact that you keep, you hold the 10-20%. Now, again, 10-20%, it tells me that there isn't a policy, because either it's 10% or 20%. Because if you, when do you decide whether you're going to hold 10% or 20%? So that just gives me a little bit of uncertainty as to what your policy is regarding the payment of these service providers. And I'm also pleased then, it's not all bad, that the books will be delivered by December. So I will then make a request to the chairperson of the committee that in the last week of December we will visit the schools to see that the books are there. And there won't be any schools without books by the 1st of or rather in January where the school starts. So thanks for that. Thank you. That's as far as I have.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. It was a question I meant to ask earlier, and that I must apologise. CFO, you made mention when you first took us through the presentation of the discrepancy between the amounts for compensation of employees. It was just a passing reference to it, but can you give us some detail, please? I notice on the slide headed Total Appropriate Budget of the Department that you mentioned the compensation of employees is $315 billion, and yet on the table where it shows the actual expenditures, it indicated the final appropriation is $414 million. This is a difference of R99 billion. It's a huge amount of money. Please, I would like an explanation as to how it suddenly jumped $99 billion from one slide to another. Not in terms of these figures. Unless they've been put down differently. Because you have $315.560 million. Sorry, it is $99 billion, I beg your pardon. But it's a great amount of money that just suddenly jumped. I mean, every human being has no concept of that kind of sum. Can we just have an explanation of that, please?
Thank you, Chair. This is my follow-up question. I'm still on the lead. The DJ, I want to check if on this analytical grant, do you have any assessment? Or do you have done any assessment to see if this grant, to see if these analytical are improving, especially on math and science? Or you just leave it to the province, as you said? And then the other one is just on the... I just want to check the status of this technical secondary school in the country, because we are giving a lot of money on this. So is this school have any... I just want to check if ever. In fact, I want the latest. What is the latest on this school? Thank you.
Yes. May I just alert the members that we have another very thick presentation ahead of us, and also the Department of Public Works must make a presentation. That's one. But two, let me alert the National Treasury that they would like you to make comments at some point. I alert you now so that I don't sound like ambushing you when I call upon you to make comments on all of these issues. Thank you. Department, can you briefly respond to those other questions?
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll start with the last honorable member about the denality. We can make available the reports on the assessments that we have against the grant as well as the performance of the schools. I don't have figures offhand, but they do have an impact in particular on some of the classes that we monitor at the grade 12 as well, where they do contribute quite a number of the bachelor passes as well as the passes in mathematics in particular. Overall result, but we can make that available to the committee, Honorable Chair. And then on the technical schools, basically, in the first few years, we had difficulty with spending in that regard and making progress, but I think provinces, we can make available our reports and assessment in that regard of the monitoring and so forth, because it's about the refurbishment of the workshops and the capacitating teachers in terms of promoting the technical subjects in school, so we can make that available. In fact, the department has just gazetted the introduction of what we refer to as a technical math and a technical science in order to promote the technical stream. An issue raised by the Council of Education Ministers was that the grant, while dealing with the other areas, did not make provision for materials. Like, I'll just use an example, that if you were in a woodwork workshop and you did not have funding for buying wood. So we had done all the hard work, but then in having it operationalized, you didn't have, it's like having a lead and you don't have your chemicals. So it's something we're looking into as well, and how we could assist schools to be funded in that regard. I think the honorable members, the first two honorable members, we take your comments and we will need your advice, and we'll take you forward and report to you in light of everything that's appropriated to us. CFO.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. With regard to dumping of the money at the end of the financial year, in our department, we don't have this problem. Withholding of money is done on conditional grants if a particular grant is not spending. And if they are not spending by the end of the financial year, we return the money to National Treasury. And then depending on whether they give the relevant information for us to apply for a rollover, then we do that. But if they don't provide information, we don't even try to apply for a rollover. We do it where it's required or where it's necessary. With regard to compensation of employees, the way we differentiate it, if, let's say, an honorable member wants to ask us how much do you have for Karigudi, that's why I put this slide up there. Calgood, we have 572.703 million. Now, this includes compensation of employees for Karigude officials and volunteers that are doing the work for us. Webbooks, also developers of webbooks, the 915 million includes what we need to pay if developers have to be paid. If they don't actually pay, then we won't have compensation for that. And so forth. School nutrition, we have the earmarked fund. This is the portion that is in the department for employees of SNP, the monitoring implementation of the NSNP project, and national assessment. We have a portion that goes to compensation. The 315, it includes compensation for this project. It's just for normal employees in the department, if I can use that word. But 414, it includes a portion. We take a bit from all this and we add it to the other one because it's salaries for those officials as well. Hence, we have those differences. And some, they are not on the permanent establishment of the department. Recording of workbooks. This one we pay when we receive the delivery notes. As well as normally we get the delivery note with the invoices. Hence we only reflect it when we receive it. We can't reflect it beforehand because we might not know how much has been delivered. So we only pay when we receive the invoice for the workbooks. But to remind the honourable member that we are using a cash modified accounting as well. So we account for transaction when it happens.
When payment happens, on the road, when payment happens, or when payment happens?
When payment happens. There was a question on new schools, but I think this will be covered in the infrastructure presentation. Thank you, Andrew.
Let's go on to the next presentation, which is on infrastructure. We will take item 4 and 5 together because that also talks to issues relating to infrastructure. So Department of Public Works. We'll end that when we have to. While setting up, we will not take a tea break because the issues are quite involved. But anyone who wants to get some refreshment, just rise, get your refreshment, and come back to your feet. That goes for both members and our officers here.
What is the problem that they follow? Because it's like, if you don't do this, we'll just give it to the treasury. I'm having a concern because this thing is not to be delivered. It is being affected on the ground. It's not to the service delivery that is being affected. So we can't just hold them to say that because they are not rolled over, the money is taken back to treasury. So now it's fine. To me, it's not fine.
This one, they are not, it was informal. We take it offline. Yeah. In fact, I will take one of the days. There are certain things I can't add into trouble with the AG or. I'm not serious about that. I'm saying we can explain some of the things. That's why I say sometimes it's limited time in the way you respond. You need to the
then go and spend more time explaining what you think. But I think we are here for you anyway to discuss, and we still got, we don't have a lot of time, but over the next few years, but we can still talk after this meeting. Can I proceed, Andrew? Yeah, Ms. Diale, Silvio Diale is our CD, is the Accelerated School Infrastructure Delivery Initiative, which is a common name known out in the public. You'll conclude in the end whether we're really accelerating. But it's in terms of government, for treasury purposes, it's a school infrastructure backlog grant, and that is resides in the DBE, and it's the DBE that manages totally that process. We start off with they call it a biscope, in a way, and then Ms. Diale will take us to the PowerPoint and give the details of what has happened since the program has been put in place. If the quality of the sound may not be there, but I think the pictures do speak a thousand words.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Members. I will now continue with the presentation. When we were invited, there were particular issues that we were requested to attend to, and those have been covered in different sections of this particular presentation that I'm about to make. We were requested to cover the brief outline of the conceptualization of the grant, the objectives and the intentions of the grant, the overview of the historic performance of this particular grant, and lastly, to look at financial and non-financial performance of this particular grant in the financial year. It is in this quite bulky presentation, but I will try to go through it as quick as possible, and where I have missed out anything, we can address it during the Q&A. Basically, this grant was is meant to eradicate the schools that are in their entirety are built of inappropriate material, and that ranges from your math schools up to Blanky School, as well as some of the schools that are prefabricated that are inhabitable. And over and above this inappropriate school sub-program, we have the schools that never had water, schools that never had sanitation, as well as schools that never had electrification. And in between, we acknowledge that there is a combination of schools that have partly mud, some have been vandalized and all of it. But this particular grant is for the schools that never had that particular infrastructure, or they are unsafe in their entirety. How this particular program is being implemented? Basically, the program, as the ACTDG and the CFO had alluded, is that the department never used to implement infrastructure. Infrastructure was implemented in provinces. However, just before 2010, there was a bid that was made to National Treasury to say there are this backlog that are never ending. The money is being provided to provinces. However, we are not seeing any particular impact. And therefore, the minister, the deputy minister, requested National Treasury to provide funding to deal with these backlogs. And that therefore meant that the department at National Office had to then pull together resources to be able to do this particular implementation, because it was just never how the department was structured to implement infrastructure projects. And now what happens is that we are not doing this on our own. We work closely with the provinces to ensure that we deliver what they need, and in terms of the specifics of each project, we discuss with them. But over and above that, there are custodians that we acknowledge, and this custodian in most cases it is the provincial department who we have to work with right from the inception of the project up to conclusion, where we then transfer the assets to them, and therefore we involve them all the way, and perhaps how, whether it's working properly or not, that is a discussion we can get into. And how we are doing it, because as much as the department can get resources in the national department, we still need people, resources that are going to help us in terms of your procurement of professional service providers and the contractors, as well as the managing of those particular contracts that have been entered into. Therefore, what we do, we appoint different implementing agents, and as I go through the presentation, you will see who the implementing agents are that we are working together with. And what the implementing agents do in turn is to appoint the professional service providers, and those are your engineers, your QSs, your architects, and other built environment professionals, as well as the contractors. And now in front of us there is basically the organogram in terms of the reporting structure, how it works. There is the program management unit that I am heading, and I am being supported by the program support unit, and mainly this program support unit is made of consultants, and some of them are here with us today. And below us we have different implementing agents, and under the implementing agents, each one of them will have a project manager who is managing the different PSPs, professional service providers, that are contracted by the IA as well as the contractors. Our goal basically is meant to be finite, in that we, when the program started, there were a number of schools that we were looking at, and what you have in front of us here is basically the number of projects that we are looking at. What we are trying to do there is to give you the numbers in terms of the provinces and in terms of where we started off with the particular program, and as we go along, because over and above what we originally had, the schools need to be assessed, and because between when the program was conceptualized to where the projects, the schools are now being built or the services are being provided, there could be some variations in terms of the provinces in the meantime provided that particular school with services or other circumstances, or the school has been closed, and therefore as we go along at a particular point in time, we mention now at what number we are at. So I will not go through each of those, but that is an indication of where we are at. Again, there was a question in terms of what are we providing in each particular school. The video has tried to allude to the kind of infrastructure that we are providing, but we are basically led by the guidelines relating to planning for public schools infrastructure, which mentions if it's a small primary school, if it's a medium school, what are the facilities that we need to provide. And therefore, in each inappropriate school, that is where we are providing the prescribed learning and teaching spaces, and in one or more occasions we would have to do a rationalization to see what is appropriate here and there. But over and above the learning and teaching spaces, we have water, sanitation, electrification and furniture that we are providing to the schools that we are building. In terms of water supply, basically, the main impediment in terms of the water supply is that if a school is within a village that does not have water reticulations from the different water service authorities that are responsible for making sure that there is water in that particular village, there are other options that we look at. So our first option is to try and connect to the existing municipal reticulation system. And in cases where that does not exist, we explore groundwater possibilities and look at boring boreholes there, where the yield and the water quality there is of acceptable standard. But in all our schools, what we do is that we try and make sure that we do provide facilities for rainwater harvesting. Over and above that, we provide elevated water tanks. And in the past, because many of the schools that have been completed, what is now happening is there is official handovers, and often there are questions in terms of why are some of the elevated water tanks not having water and all of it. So in instances whereby there is no municipal connection where we are providing into this elevated water tank, we provide the water elevated tanks, the elevated water tanks in any case, so that there is an infrastructure in that particular school, so that when the municipality is ready, then there can be an infrastructure for them to provide potable water there. And then in terms of sanitation, if in that particular area there is sufficient water reticulation, we do provide waterborne sewage system. But in cases where there is not sufficient water, we look at EnviroLoose as well as your ventilated improved toilet, your VIP. On electrification, we try as much as possible to connect to the Eskom grid, but in case that is not possible, we connect, we provide a solar to this a particular school. Though solar has proved to be problematic in that vandalism and theft is very prevalent in those. I will now go into the different stages just to say what are the different processes that we go into before we can now see the final product on the ground. Basically, the time period that we have given ourselves from the planning until the time where we now can say this school is fit for purpose, the learners and the teachers can start using that. We are giving ourselves, on average, 18 months. And therefore, that means that there is no way of avoiding implementing the projects over more than 1 year. So this implementation happens over multi-year. And some of the processes that we, some of the issues that increase the time in terms of implementation is that you find that some of the schools, in the beginning what we tried to do is to say, let us start with the building of the schools while the learners are using their existing infrastructure. But in certain instances, it becomes not possible, and therefore we have to start giving them temporary accommodation before we can even start with the actual construction of the schools. And also the size of the school, it impacts on the time, the state of the infrastructure, basically, to go to that particular school has proven quite a problematic in many instances, because we find that delivery of material and really the mobilization by the contractor, it might take time if the roads are not in good condition. And many of the those who have been to the Eastern Cape, you will attest to the issues of the conditions of the infrastructure there. And therefore, and then the other issue really that we have found is the internal processes that our implementing agents have to go through. You find that they are longer than we have allowed for in our planning. And basically the stages that we are talking about, we start with the planning and then we go on to, we appoint the IA for that particular stage and they have to prepare the plan, and we go to the second stage where we are satisfied with the plans, you get the IAs then to go on to procure the professional service providers. The third stage we go on to the design. The fourth stage is then the procurement of the contractors. And once the contractors have been procured, you can now start with the actual construction of the works. And then we go on to the sixth and seventh stage where we hand over the school and then close out whereby we can now give the school to the custodian. And then the implementing agents that we are using, we have a variety of them. We have DBSA as part of the implementing agents that we have appointed. We have IDT, we have SCUHA, we have Eastern Cape Department of Public Works, we have National Department of Public Works, and in certain instances, we have the provinces where they have a capacity to help us with the implementation of this particular schools and services. And just to give an example of the time or the period that it takes to build the school, I have just tried to look at our historic information to say, for example, in the Eastern Cape, we appointed DBSA in 2011, and the first school that was completed afterwards was in October 2012. And the last one of the 49 that we gave to DBSA was completed in March this year. And the construction started in January 2012, and when you look at the construction period, you can see that it has taken between 10 months and 26 months, the actual construction, but the entire process, it goes on to 33 months. And in the case of Western Cape, as an example, we appointed Western Cape in May 2012 to do to start off with the 14 of our schools, and later on we gave them 14 schools. And the first school that they managed to finish, it reached a completion on the 6th of May this year. And then you can see the construction started in January 2012, and therefore the entire process took about 24 months. And what does not help as well is that in the process you find that there are some of the contractors that are not performing properly, and therefore we land with a termination of their contracts and going through another process of procurement that even extends the process further. But in Mpumalanga, we have a different case there where we have TBSA who was in Mpumalanga. They were given their schools, the second batch after the 49 schools. They were given the particular schools in 2012 of November. The construction of that school started in December 2013, and the first school was scheduled to finish, well, that we got by the end of August. And there, that again, a typical case of some of the anomalies where you find that the contractor put all they have into that and gave the school in 8 months. However, the entire process starting from November up to August, you can see that it took 21 months. And therefore, these are some of the issues that inform the times that we are in relaying to the honorable members. In the Eastern Cape, we have other implementing agents as well. I just would like to give you a range of different performances that we are getting from our implementing agents. You have IDT, you have Guha, you have Eastern Cape that were appointed in May 2012, and already you get IDT who started construction in 2013, and their first school you got in 2014, and that is about 13 months of construction, and the process took around 19 months. And you get CDC, who gave us the school, who constructed the school in 14 months, and the process took 21 months. And then you have Eastern Cape Department of Public Works, who started with the same other implementing agent, but up to this stage we have not received any finished schools from them. And then you have in the Free State, we have IDT. And again, the other issues that we're experiencing is that you find the same implementing agent in different provinces performing differently. In Free State, for example, we have IDT who are appointed more or less around the same time as IDT in the Eastern Cape, but up to this stage, we have not received any schools from them. Okay, now in terms of overall progress, this is a summary of what we have been able to achieve to date. We have different implementing agents that we have appointed, and up to this stage in the sub-program of inappropriate schools, we have 299 schools out of the 510 that I gave in the beginning that are now in the hands of the implementing agents for implementation. And so far, we have 75 schools that have been completed. You have 70 of those in the Eastern Cape. By the way, I had in the video that we were showing just now, then when the video was made, we were still at 22, but today we are at 70 schools in the Eastern Cape. In Western Cape, we have taken 4 schools, and in Mpumalanga, we have 1 school. And we have also just given, in terms of the previous financial years, how we and when we finished the schools. Basically, the APP, our annual performance target, what we had planned to start with in a particular financial year, I have given it in that particular row. You'll see 49 in 2012, 13, 114, 2013, 14, 150, and a balance of 171. And then the number of schools that have been completed per financial year, we have also indicated over there. And that makes the 75 that we are talking to. And then in the hub program of water, out of the 1120 we had set out to do, we have to date completed 225, and you can see that in which financial year those were provided with water, and we've also provided the breakdown of when which provinces were provided with that particular service. On sanitation as well, we have 275 schools that we have provided the sanitation to date out of the 741, and again we have provided a breakdown of where those schools are in terms of the provinces. And then on electrification as well, we have up to date provided 265 schools with electricity, and below is the breakdown of where those schools are per province. And in terms of expenditure, when we look at expenditure in terms of what we spend for each financial year, you will see that in 2011, total financial year, we spent 76 million. The following expenditure increased to 859. The last financial year, we went up 1.3 billion, and the allocation for this year is 2.9 billion, and there are others in the outer years. But also, I've tried to show in terms of what was allocated in that particular year versus what we had spent, actual expenditure. You've seen the first year we did poorly. We spent 10%. The following year it improved to 42%, and the next we were at around 70%. And this year, what we have spent so far, it is 365 that have gone through our debt system, but also there are invoices that we have and are just waiting to go through debt system that we're sitting at 609 million, which is 24% of what has been allocated. And we have had a number of challenges in this particular program of ours, and we have tried to talk to those particular issues that we had. For example, when the program started in its first year, National Treasury made the funds available to the department in 2010. To be spent in the following financial year. And at the beginning of the program, we had not established the program support unit, and neither was the program manager appointed at that particular time. And therefore, the planning left behind, but that has since been dealt with. We were appointed together with the program support unit, and that helped a lot in terms of the planning and the rolling out of the program. And again, the other challenge is that this is where we spend about 10% of our budget, and the problem is in the first year, we had to start with the planning before we can really hit the ground running, and therefore that led to the different delays that we encountered. And in terms of our IAs as well, what I have alluded to earlier on is that you find that we do have agreements with our IAs, and every now and then we make sure that we include the clauses to make sure that we manage them better and even to hold them to account even better. And therefore, what we have realized is that even with the implementing agents, some of the capacity is lacking because you find that some of them have to now start getting the support units before they can start with the implementation of the program. So this talks to the undercapacity by the IAs as well as our professional service providers, that you find that they are having too much work and they are spreading their resources way too thin for different programs. But we are dealing with these issues in terms of the contracts that we have. We enforce those contracts and we take steps where we need to do so. I think I've addressed to this in terms of where the particular municipality doesn't have the bulk infrastructure. You find that we have to come up with other means to provide some service to those particular schools. Okay, and again, the problems that we have is that some of our schools are in remote areas, and therefore you find that we have poor road conditions, and during the rainy seasons it becomes impossible to go through for delivery of materials and or even to start with construction. And in the beginning of our program, we had a lot of problems in terms of, you find that some of the contractors had to be terminated, some they were liquidated, and that contributed to our slow progression. Okay, I will not go through all of them, but the one major thing now, one thing is that the only schools that we have not appointed implementing agencies to is the schools in the Eastern Cape, about 200 odd schools where we have not appointed implementing agents, and those schools, according to the ATP, they should be implemented in this financial year and the coming financial year. But you find that many of the schools are basically affected by the process of rationalization and measures. However, we do not wait for this process to come to an end, but it ends up affecting the targets that we have, and therefore you'll see that in the first slide where I show the baseline and the actuals that we are implementing, you find that some of the schools, they are increasing, because in the measures, the rationalization, we also take into account the schools that will be provided together with the school that was originally on the list. Okay, some of the things that we have tried to do to mitigate against the delays that we had incurred in the past was to make sure that we limit the number of projects that we are giving to an IA per project manager that is with them. We insist, for example, for inappropriate schools to say that you as the implementing agent cannot have one project manager, for example, looking at more than 10 schools, because we believe that beyond that, the program manager cannot be effective in ensuring that they monitor the schools properly. In terms of water and sanitation, we limited the number to 35. And in terms of the work that has to be given to the different professional service providers, we said if it's the inappropriate schools, you cannot give one professional service provider, two professional service providers, more than 5 schools, for example, or 35 in terms of water and sanitation. Water and sanitation, they're generally small projects, and therefore the economy of scale, for it to be worth their while, it has to be more schools that they are doing, and in terms of management as well, they can visit a number of schools at a particular point in time. And we have also insisted that our contractors cannot be given more than 3 schools. In the first batch that you had given to DSA, you found that we would have appointed a contractor, we would have given them 12 schools, for example, and when they get liquidated, all our 12 projects are affected. And therefore, we have resorted to making sure that no contractor on a city is working on more than 3 schools at a time. We have also built in some penalty clauses in terms of the arguments that we have with our IAs, in terms of during the planning to say you will do this within this particular time, and if that does not happen, we will have to impose the clauses. And then we can, if anything goes wrong, we can just follow the provisions of the contract, follow through, and cancel the contracts where possible. And also, there is a particular avenue that we wanted to look at, because during the AG, it was clear that we cannot appoint any of our implementing agents without going out on tender, and therefore we sought out to establish the framework agreement. This was basically is a panel with is a panel or database with different implementing agents from the state-owned entities, ranging to the privately owned companies, and we have IAs, we have professional service providers, the good environment, as well as contractors, and we believe this once it has been finalized, it will go a long way in terms of the procurement. If we had to terminate, because again we had to be cognizant to say if we are terminating, that might also result in projects being stagnant for a while until we get the replacement, and therefore this mechanism is meant to assist us with that. Also, what we are looking at is looking at constructing our schools using alternative construction technologies. About 72 of our projects, 36 that we have given to National Department of Public Works, who is still in procurement stage, as well as IDT, who has already finalized their procurement and they will be starting soon. We are also looking at providing schools built from alternative construction technologies as a way to deal with our challenges. And that is... Okay, let me just to go back to our finances in terms of the commitments that we have had since inception. And when I talk about commitments, is now the projects that are with our implementing agent. They have appointed professional service providers and they have appointed contractors. We have about 10 billion worth of projects that we have contracted to implementing agents, and our expenditure since inception, if we add all of that up, is 3 billion, and we still have 6.9 billion worth of contracts to honor. And the expenditure in terms of the 14-15 financial year allocation, I had alluded to that. We are not taking out, okay, what we have done, you will realize that in this financial year's allocation, it was 2.9 billion, but to facilitate payments, we have converted 396 million of that to schedule 4 grants, and that is to the Western Cape, so that they can at least have the upfront payment as we are doing with other implementing agents, and therefore...
Sorry, Chair.
No, sorry, that is not in the presentation.
That is why we are just opening our pages, not knowing where we're talking about now.
Okay.
Then we'll...
On page 23 in the handout.
Chairperson, if the lady can indicate, now I'm in page, sorry, so because we're following the pages, but it keep on jumping from this area to that area.
On page 23, honorable members,
I think the presenter did indicate that he will be doing the presentation, but what is not covered here, maybe they will cover it when they are doing answers. I think now because he's perusing, maybe if there are questions that is relating to what he's saying, will be covered on the question.
I think it's fine, Chair. I think we're at the point we're concluding with just... go back to the financial, but I think we can take questions. You're done. Okay. Members, before that, can you come in now and make your comment so that when we take questions and clarity, members would have had the benefit of what you have to say on this particular issue.
Thank you, Chair. In summary, since the Minister of Public Works has been appointed to coordinate seat taking with the Minister of Basic Education,
we have started engaging with the Department of Health Basic Education. The agreement between the minister was that we cannot only coordinate. We have to contribute to make sure that we add to the acceleration of the building of schools. So in that respect, we have been appointed as implementing agents since November 2013, and we've done all the institutional arrangements between the department and any other implementing agent. In terms of implementing the schools, we have clustered the schools. We have been given 36 schools in the Eastern Cape. We have clustered them into seven, grouped them into seven clusters of about 3 to 4 schools, depending on the geographic location. We will implement the program in terms of the framework of basic education in all respects. That is, we are being supported because the Department of Public Health, even though it's an infrastructure department, it has not directly affected schools. We have been doing that through the Department of, through our provincial department. So we are supported by the Department of Basic Education in terms of program management unit. We will appoint, in actual fact, as we speak, Chair and Honorable Members, our tenders for social facilitation that are serving on our national day. Following that, we will appoint professional service providers, and then they will do their work, and after that, we will appoint contractors. I think it was mentioned that we need to talk about the relationship with the provincial public works. As mentioned in the presentation by DBE, they are implementing agents in certain respects, but in relation to ourselves as the National Department of Public Works, our provinces are custodians of the finished product. So once all the activities have been done, eventually the assets, they end up in the assets register of the Department of Public Works, Provincial Public Works. So in all intents and purposes, we are an implementing agent. The institutional framework is finalized. We are in the implementation mode. We have submitted all the documents that are required by the Department of Education. As I mentioned, the social facilitators should be appointed in the next 2-3 weeks. They are serving on the National Aid Committee, as I speak. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Members, you want to now pose questions? Honorable Sheikh Imam, Honorable Sheikh, Honorable Lakmore, Honorable Nyalungu, Honorable Manana, Honorable Matlopa, and lastly, Honorable Shopperton. You will be the last, and I'm sorry, Honorable Mark Luchman. Okay, that's fine.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I would imagine that these questions will be directed to either basic education or public works.
Fine. Direct your question to the,
okay,
to the department that are here. They will, okay, see how to respond. Yeah.
Okay. This is what I've identified in this country, especially in the Eastern Cape. I'm not from the Eastern Cape. This appears to be a problem, schools being built, and the handover period between public works to the Department of Education. The time that it takes for public works to actually hand over to education department for them to hand over to the respective ones to get the school funding, I found very serious problems to such an extent that I had to go to the Eastern Cape Department about 30 times. And the only time I got the school handed over is when I had a public works on site. I had the Department of Education on site, I had a supervisor there, I had a caretaker there, I had a contractor there, I had a principal there, everybody, each one had to physically hand the keys over and sign. That's the only way the school is handed over. So I don't know what the situation is now and whether you're still experiencing that problem in getting schools handed over handlessly once it's built. The issue of contractors is a problem. Have we identified contractors that are giving us a problem in terms of building the school timelessly? And blacklisting them so that we are aware of who these people are and so that they are not given more than they could actually handle, because that seems to be a serious problem. The other problem, because there is we were talking about prefabricated schools. And this is a specific school I want to talk about that was brought to my attention 2-3 weeks ago. Prefabricated school for 43 years. That has been condemned by the Department of Environment, the Department of Engineering, There are reports that effect is Collingwood in Osterlo went to it in Durham, and they've done everything, to the Department of Basic Education, from the provincial side, national side, to the public works. I think a roof had collapsed last year, it took over a year. Children had to be cramped into other classes before that was sorted out. But the school is there, there's bird lice, it's a health hazard to the learners, and nothing really seems to be done about that, which seems to be a serious concern. So I'd like to know exactly what we could actually do in terms of that. The other issue is, which I'm very concerned about, and I must first of all thank you for the presentation, and I can see going forward, the progress I'm doing. But one major thing that seems to be have excluded, I've never found in any of these infrastructure, all these schools, anything to do, any extracurricular facilities or recreational facilities, sporting facilities, so that could be part and parcel of the curriculum of the learners in these schools, which is very important because, like we say, you know, not every learner is going to become a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher or whatever it is. But, and as you can see, in terms of sports, we seem to have been going down here. But it appears that that has not been taken into consideration in the schools that we are actually that we are providing for them. I think I'll stop there for now. I'll come back if necessary. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. My input is very short. I must commend the presenter for presenting such important and comprehensive information in a short space of time. I think she did a good job. Yeah. So my input is just regarding the slides, I think it's the last 257 and 58, the one about the contractors, and it's just obviously for information's sake. I'm not criticizing anybody here, so please see it in it. I think there's a limit to contractors to these schools. Now, I just like to know what sort of criteria is used, because surely some contractors might be to cope with more than three schools. So is it across the board three schools, or do you use some sort of a CIGB grading or something to that effect? You know, just because it's probably unfair, because some contractors might have capacity to deal with more schools, so you sort of delay the process. That's the one. And the other issue, and again, I'm not sure if it could be addressed here, is the schools, new schools are essential, it's needed, but what about the repairs and maintenance to schools, because that is a serious issue, especially, and I'm sure it's the case in other provinces, but in the East, okay, some schools are falling apart. So just if we could get a response to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I just want to clarify, first of all, the numbers, and specifically with respect to the Eastern Cape. On page 4, there is a table which is headed as CD Scope of Works, and it indicates, under inappropriate schools, it indicates for the Eastern Cape, baseline 442, actual to date 458. I don't know what that 458 refers to. On page 17, there is a CD Progress with inappropriate schools, and it's indicated that 189 schools were targeted and only 75 have been completed. So I want some clarity, please, with respect to those numbers. On page 24, Chairperson, there is reference made to, the sentence is, DDE has not been able to ramp up and implement a CD at a required speed due to the structure of the unit and internal processes. And I just wanted to understand more about those internal challenges. On page 27, there's a very concerning challenge that is listed, and that is the fact that Lafarge dominates the supply of cement, stone, and aggregate. Are you actually saying here that they have been fixing their prices accordingly? I mean, they can, from the Eastern Cape. I know this is a problem, and it certainly held up construction in the Eastern Cape in the past, but you're listing it as a challenge. How real is the challenge? Chair, I want to link with what my colleague previously said about the sporting facilities, and I want to clarify that. My understanding of the norms and standards for infrastructure is that all new schools must have everything, so the library, the laboratories, everything, but including, and I can't remember the regulations, I think the regulation 4 deals with things that must be put in existing schools. And then there are, in addition to that, things like sporting facilities, disabled access or universal access, as it's referred to, and various requirements with respect to ventilation, lighting, etc. Are all of these included in any of the schools that you're building? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. On ECG implementation process, you said in Eastern Cape, the ECDPW, I think it's the Eastern Cape Department of Public Works, doesn't complete even the same school. What are you doing with this situation? And then also in the state, the IDT was appointed in June 2012, but to date, no school has been completed. Why and what measures put in place to make sure that the work is done in the province? And then on case 33, you said the DDE has established a task team to investigate available eggs in the market. Can you clarify this?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I have a couple of questions. Let me start with on page 16. Indeed, it is very disturbing to hear that the Department of Public Works to the Eastern Cape has failed this matter. But the contract, if I heard you very well, is between the National Department of Education and the National Department of Public Works. It's straight to the province. Okay? But it's really very, very disturbing. With regards to the state, maybe you can educate us. What is this problem? Why is the IDT failing to do this? Under the challenges. On page 24, the first bullet. It seems as if the unit does not have limited authority. Can you explain to us what is this so that we are taking on board? Bullet number two, my colleague has already asked that. I wanted to know more. On page 27, it's under challenges. Bullet number one. What is it? If you can explain to us. And then 28. That bullet is challenged in many instances due to a number of schools which have been excluded. Can you elaborate on this? Okay, thank you.
Honorable.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, in 2011-2012, the AG's report on the infrastructure delivery process shows that there is lack of project monitoring and leadership oversight by the Department of Basic Education and the National Department of Public Works, which has led to project delays and poor workmanship in all provinces. I want to check, Honorable Chair, whether the department has been in a position to rectify this challenge and the concern that was raised by the Auditor General on the issue of the lack of project monitoring. Do we now have project monitoring are we focusing on that? Because we are hearing the delays that are taking place. Maybe it's the same thing that was identified by the auditor general. I want also to check whether the Department of Basic Education has policy that deals comprehensively with the infrastructure delivery process and guidelines. Because here you can see that maybe it's not clear who's doing what. I think that policy can be in a position to separate the roles, to say if you are the Department of Basic Education, what is expected of you implementing agents, Department of Public Works. Do you have that? Because also it was the concern that was raised to say that the department must fast-track that particular thing so that it can fast-track the delivery of schools in different provinces. Also, there were schools that were picked up for auditing by the Auditor General. And the AG's concern was that there were provinces that did not make adequate progress during their contractual term, and their contracts were not cancelled. Talk to the monitor. Were not cancelled in a timely manner, or delays in appointing or replacement contractors occurred. There was a delay because of the lack of monitoring. And also there were notices that were issued, or notice letters that were issued, you know, but not enforced. And the challenge around the issue of the service level agreement to ensure that those implementing agents adhere to the service level agreement. I'm going back to the IDT. It's 2 years, 3 months that they have never delivered anything. I think the colleague was asking about this one. And those delays that are taking place, can the department share with us that if there are delays on building schools, what is the escalation cost to share with us? Escalation cost, because it's not a matter of just delays and without the cost on it. If they can share with us, what are the escalation costs if there are these delays? And also the measures, because the presenter just presented to say that even now they have never delivered the school. Since June 2012, now is September 2014, which is 2 years, 3 months. And they are not hearing to say what has the department done, because there are escalation costs. We would want to hear about the escalation costs, because it's important. And Honorable Chair, the other thing that I have to ask, people are saying that, let me ask this. Are schools built in the right place, or are schools accessible where they are built? And there has been an enrollment in those particular schools at the moment, or they're just lying as white elephants. I'm just asking because I'm from the stakeholder forum of the education. The other challenge that I want the department to share with the issue of the security, because the presenter talked about the vandalism, breaking of the infrastructure that the government has built. Can you share with us what is the plan of the security in those schools that we have built? And the other schools, because where I was, people are complaining to say that the government is doing very well in building those schools, but now the security that they have is in the is during the day, and at night in those computers that are being put in the lab and so on, they break it. And you indicated in your presentation also that is a challenge. What is the plan of the department? Because we can't just build the schools. We will not complete building schools if we don't protect what we have built. If you can share with us around the issue of security, what is the plan of the department on the matter of the school?
The other one is hiding.
Okay. also around the issue of the delay in building the school. Which method do you think is in building the school? I was told that I once heard that now there is an alternative method that is being used to build the school, which is which fast track the service delivery. We even said while fast tracking service delivery, but we must also look at the issue of the job creation because of the EPWA. That now, you know, it shortens the time. It was 2 weeks, 3 weeks that they were waiting. Whereas the benchmark is 100 days, I'm not sure. Like something of that sort for EPWP. I want to say, now we are being told about delays. We are being told about 33 months. We are being told that, you know, it's taking long. Which method is being used in building those schools? Maybe you can share with us, because seemingly it's like we are going back to, you know, the way we were doing things at school. Maybe at the moment, Chair, I can pause because I've written a lot of things in a lot of pages now. I can't delay the other colleagues. I will come back to pick that up. Thank
you. Honorable Chairperson, thank you. I have been covered to an extent by my colleagues, but I would just like to raise a few questions as well. If I could start, it's page 4 in the I've been given, but I think it's slide number 8. It has been referred to already. At the bottom there, it says total under in-progress scores is 510. And I note in the table that appears on page 17 that that's also our target figure. And yet it says that the actual to date is 527. Can I have an understanding of what that implies? Because it says we've gone past our target already and we haven't spent anything like a full budget on this. Is this just what's planned to be done? What's been identified for action? Can I just have an understanding of that? I know that the heading is scope of work, so it would include everything that's intended, so I do understand that. On page 5, could I have your comment, please? I notice that it's part of your mandate in building these schools to provide for water and sanitation. I presume that within this budget that we're talking about, you know, that we've appropriated to the department, we cover the costs of that water and sanitation provision. It seems to me it's a duplicate, or a duplicated mandate, because human settlements also have the same mandate, as does the Department of Public Works, as does the Department of Water and Sanitation. They all have this on their mandate book, that they have to provide water and sanitation in certain areas. Obviously, your focus is just going to be on schools, but are we not including this, the same amount in other budgets that would come as the same thing, if there was some synergy between the various departments that all gave the same mandate? I would ask for a comment on that, because it seems to me that we might sort of be reinventing the wheel all the time in doing this. I understand there are huge problems because there isn't water available everywhere and there isn't sanitation. It was one of my concerns as well, is when you speak about sanitation, waterborne sewage systems where sufficient water is available, it's not just dependent on the water, it's also being able to take the wastewater away and get it through a water treatment plant somewhere. So we need both sides of the infrastructure to achieve the task, as it were. So, but I suggest then that's part of the mandate of water and sanitation, so I would just like some, what your feelings would be on that, because I feel if we the appropriations consist in any way, then we should be doing that. Page 15. I just wanted to find out as well, again, as part of this budget, I haven't heard any mention of the land that is utilized for building schools on. Now, I don't know whether this is land that's already in possession of the department, or land that's in possession of the Department of Public Works, or land that's to be purchased or acquired from somewhere else. Can I just get an understanding of how you go about identifying the land and where that land comes from? Do we buy it? Is it there already and we just have to reallocate it? Can I just get some understanding of that, please? On page 16, you say in the first slide on that page, it's constructed started in December 2013, and the first school is scheduled to reach PC at the end of August 2014. That actually happened. Was that deadline met, or are we still waiting for that school to be completed? And then my colleague already covered the one about the IDT's failure. Just that I have an understanding as well on page 17, where you indicate in the top
table the number of schools in the year of rollout. In 2011-12, there were 49 schools. In 12-30, 151, and then 13-14, 99. Now, it's peaked and they come down again. Is there a specific reason for that, or is that the reason that we've already covered in the other challenges you've had? Is this the evidence of those challenges? If I could just have clarity there, please. Page 19. This shows the budget. I just want to know, in 2011, there was an allocation of 700 million. Your indication is that 76 million was spent, 10%. Was the balance returned to the fiscus, or is this now a cumulative thing that carries on from year to year? Is it being rolled over? Do we add these up to get to the total? Because then the total is about 4 billion so far that's been allocated for this, and the spend so far would then be 24% of that. The 24% is just on the current. Total spend is 2.2 out of 4 billion. Is that correct? Am I getting the picture correctly? And obviously the question in my head is, should alarm bells be ringing, or is this just a result of the problems in the process? On page 25, on the second slide on that page, it is bullet point 2, I think. No, bullet point 1, probably. Contracts between EBE and IAG are not firm enough to allow for quick termination and replacement. This seems to me like there's a bit of buddy-buddy going on between the departments. I'm probably entirely wrong, but when you don't want to penalize people you like, you tend to enter into contracts like this. I've seen it in other places. Can we not do something about jacking up those contracts so they have very firm penalty clauses in them? I know there's reference to it elsewhere, but in future contracts, obviously ones that have done already, it's a bit tough to go and change because there won't be consensus of introducing a penalty. That's the right to stay. But I just think that's something that needs to be looked at. And the question I had, the PSU has finite technical capacity to take over and manage project after termination. Is there any way we could use private enterprise to get involved in this, to try and speed up the process? And private enterprise is profit motive, and that tends to get people moving a bit quicker than when you're using public funds where there's no profit motive. On page 29, and you'll be lost, sorry, on the way forward. You say to accelerate and conclude that as the targets by 15-16, planning has been completed in terms of scope and cost of schools. Is that all 510 target schools, or is that the 527 that was shown on that first page, I think on page 4, in that target there? Can I just have an answer on that? Just in general terms, thank you for this. I think an informative but somewhat alarming presentation that you've given us. I can't say I blame the Minister and the DG for not being here and leaving you to face the flag, but we have a huge problem on our hands, and I'm sure you're aware of that. I just feel I need to say that for me, I want to see some passion in the department, because this is the only way out of poverty for our people, is to educate them. And basic education is where it starts. And unless we address this situation, we're on the road to nowhere. So I'm just pleading with you, please, let's see your passion for the job you're doing. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Shopping,
sorry. Thank you very much, Chair Kirsten. When I started, when I introduced myself as coming from the ANC, it was not out of any accident. It's because I love the good story of the ANC. You see, when I came to Parliament many years ago, I knew nothing, very little. I think my friend Bikri will agree with me when we traveled to the Scandinavian countries in 1998. We knew very little. But now, they take rural people to universities like this, leadership and governance. And I would like to share this one. I used to be in justice, and I shared with the DG for justice. And I hope you will take it very seriously. One of our professors told us this. In the public sector management of programs include policy and planning, public finance, planning instruments such as the MTEF, public-private partnerships, etc. But she went on to say the most important thing is regular preparation of financial statements will help you not only to monitor, but to evaluate the effectiveness, and then you can be able to check the impact made by your projects in our communities. That is what I want you to take with you, DG and your team. Because to me, as an activist, I'm not worried about who did not deliver on time, whether did. I did not even worry to listen to all the things. What I want is you, yourself, as leader, to be responsible for everything. You, the things that you delegate to other people, you've got to, the final accountability rests with you. And you must not conduct your business in a way that you are conducting a ritual. It's not a ritual. Here we spend this is remaining percentage. I'm a rural woman. I'm not worried about your business. I want to know what impact do you, when you sleep at night, feel I have delivered to the children of South Africa? Do you have that feeling? Or do you sometimes say, I might be guilty of having drowned a generation, frustrated doctors that could have been, lawyers that could have been, because if the Department of Basic Education does not deliver, comrades are getting nowhere. There is nothing that will happen without this department. That is why government consciously allocated a lot of funds to this department. And 10%, I would like us actually to devote most of our time checking on just this department as this appropriation committee. Whether we can come back as a committee and convince ourselves that, yes, there was impact on the money that we allocated to the Department of Basic Education. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Just one or two areas that I would like to comment on. I know that on page 5, you have identified the scope of work for ACD. But I'm just asking myself this question, and all of those are really very important. Inappropriate structures, electricity, sanitation, water. I'm just asking myself, why not add libraries and laboratories? Somebody mentioned both streets as well, because it forms part of the backlog that this government inherited from apartheid in 1994. You are settled with that. And in fact, all of us are settled with that. I'm not just saying, pointing a finger at the department. All of us are faced with that terrible past, which we must correct. And when we have funds to correct some of those backlogs, we then exclude the others. Very critical libraries and laboratories in the school. And even sports. Because sport has become a profession these days, a highly paid profession these days. So I don't know whether really we have explanation why we chose these four items and excluded the other three. There may be more others. But one appreciates as well the point made earlier on that there are a number of other departments play here. If you talk about water, there's a department for that, electricity and so on and so on. So the kind of interaction between yourself and those departments responsible for these facilities also, it would be interesting to know. Somebody mentioned accessibility of the school. The road. I know that you're not going to build the road. That's not your line function. But the interaction between yourself and the Department of Transport, when you build the school, and transport, transporting kids and teachers having to drive to the place, and even your officials having to leave their cars somewhere in order to and then walk to the school. Do you consider all of that? And I'm saying some of the things are not your responsibility, but I'm asking the question, what is your relationship with all of these line departments which must then assist you to make your school places worth being out of? That's the first thing. The other area that I also want to talk to, a number of my colleagues spoke on the issue of slide 16 at the Eastern Cape. I want to generalize the question, the issue. Where you find challenges in terms of implementation of your infrastructure, is it the problem of capacity? If it is a problem of capacity, is there something you're doing to build that capacity? Because at the end of the day, the issue cannot be, well, this project was not implemented, and so we then withdrew the money. There's somewhere, I can't recall who was briefing us, whether it was the FSC that made mention of this point, that some infrastructure funds have been withdrawn. Is the issue of capacity, and if it is so, what are you doing to build capacity? Because it's not the issue of taking the money away and then back to National Treasury or asking for rollover. It is the issue of ensuring that particular service we're supposed to give, but you found there was no infrastructure on the ground. You then withheld the money, but you then follow up by creating the capacity so that you can give back the money again, because you can't punish those who benefit from that infrastructure by simply withholding the money and taking it back to Treasury and say, give the explanation that it's capacity. I have began to argue that government, it doesn't matter which department, government cannot continue to lament like the private sector about the issue of lack of skills and lack of capacity. Because we must take responsibility of providing the skills and the capacity. Where does those skills and capacity go afterwards, whether to the private sector or the remaining the public service, is another matter. But government can no longer continue to lament like the private sector and say we don't have skills, we don't have the capacity. In fact, the National Development Plan says part of what it says is that we must build a capable state, developmental state. Are we making a contribution towards the attainment of that particular goal in the long run? And start here with the capacity in the provinces, in local municipalities, to be able to build these projects, your own project, educational facilities. So that's the area. Because it would not be enough for us to say, well, they condemn the Eastern Cape, it has failed. But the question then we must ask, what are we doing to enable the Eastern Cape province build this capacity, and any other province that experiences this capacity challenge? Just last
issue that I want to clarify. In almost all the provinces, you identify, there's a column which says number of projects cancelled due to sufficient infrastructure. What does that mean? In the course of requesting people to submit the infrastructure that they require, they might have given you X number. And on further investigation, you actually found that there was sufficient infrastructure in this particular area. So we handled this project. You know, similar to the number of, to the books, acquisition of books. I know because I was once in a school. You submit the acquisition of books, you inflate the number, and when the department does the audit, it actually finds that a particular school has more books than is required. It would then be a case, and therefore you have cancelled some of the projects. If you could get that clarity. Thank you.
Yeah, they will stand on the...
Okay, the first question was on the asset transfer. If I got it correctly, it was about the handover of the school for its usage. What do we do once the school has reached what we call practical completion? Even before everybody signs for it, we get the school to use that particular facility. But what is the challenge is the actual transfer of that school from our books to the books of the custodian. But usually what basically affects the process is that you find that during the monitoring and implementation, we get the custodians, we invite the custodians, for example, your public works, to say, during the course of the implementation, you have to be part of this process so that at the end of the day, once we are finished, you can take over the property. But you find that at the end of the process, because the custodian was not diligent in terms of coming to the different meetings, you find that they ask for certain information that in the beginning was not made clear. But that is just the technicality, and we are working on that to make sure that we transfer the asset. But you are correct in that once the school is finalized, it is difficult to get all the parties together to sign for that. But that is not at the detriment of the usage of the particular infrastructure. I am not sure if I've answered that. Honorable Bemba will indicate.
Comment on that, Honorable Chair, or
Yes,
thank you. Now, I think contrary to that, what I meant was that what I found is that the school was actually standing, brand new, empty, not being utilized because it was not handed over.
Honorable Chair, I understand the Honorable Member's question. Ms. Daly was responding in terms of the schools we complete. Basically, we have come across the same situation when it's a provincial department together. We try to intervene and to assist to ensure that that is, you know, speeded up. Because what we're actually doing is that the children could be benefiting from that infrastructure, but it's being blocked by a technicality and a matter of people's side. With the CD, basically, as soon as the school is ready, we refer to that as practical completion, and the safety of the structure is guaranteed. We try to get our learners into the classroom to maximize use.
The other question was, have we identified the problem contractors, and have we actually tried to blacklist those contractors? And I think we can definitely do more in that area to make sure that the contractors do not keep coming back. But what we do in our program, what we have done is to make sure that we share the between the implementing agents, the contractors that are a problem, so that we do not appoint them on our program again. But it does not help the whole country because
we must let the whole country be out of debt, and we will certainly do that. I know that National Treasury has a place where we can list these contractors, that they can be blacklisted, and we will improve on that. And there was another question on the school that is prefabricated somewhere in KZN. I think 18BD will look at that. And then in terms of the sporting facilities, there was a question on sporting facilities. In the Eastern Cape, it has been quite difficult, because what we try to do is to make sure that, so that we don't trigger in certain instances the issue of your EIA, environmental impact assessment. We try and build the schools where the existing school is at. And therefore, you find that the terrain in the Eastern Cape, it is very scenic, but it is not practical. It does not have enough space. But what we do where we find that we have enough space, we do not go all out to bring to build a state-of-the-art kind of sporting facilities, because our mandate is really to provide for basic functionality, and therefore that limits us to a certain extent. But what we do is, if there's enough space, we do create where we can get a place for soccer to be played, and we provide them with soccer posts as well. So that is so that is far as we go. And if there is, this has to be changed, I think we would have to talk to National Treasury, so that because the conditions of our grants are within a certain limit. So that is on the question from another member. And the next one was about the criteria that is being used to appoint contractors, whether we use the CID grading and all of that, and if in the process of limiting the contractors, it is not to our own detriment in terms of not giving capable contractors the work that they can do. In terms of appointing contractors, yes, we do use a CIDB grading, and but what we do, I think it's a really double-edged sword, because you try and make sure you don't put all your eggs in one basket by limiting the project that you give to this particular contractor. And I think it's just one of the risks that we are trying to mitigate, and we may be wrong in doing that, but again, we can be advised on that. And then in terms of repairs and maintenance, Mr. Mafu will address that, because it is, the program is to, like I had alluded to, is to deal with backlog schools that never had before. There's another question from Honorable Love, more in terms of the numbers that are all over the place. Let me just start with this particular slide where we are trying to show the numbers. What happens is that you find that some of the schools have to be merged. If school A has to be merged, it's on our list, but it has to be merged to school B. We do not remove school A from our list. Therefore, we add school B, and therefore that is very prevalent in the Eastern Cape. And that is why you see the numbers that are increasing there in the Eastern Cape. And then there is a slide where we are now talking about the actual implementation. I think it is this particular slide where, again, you are asking in terms of the rollout and in terms of what we have, what we had targeted versus what is being rolled out and what is being completed. There is a huge discrepancy in terms of what we have completed. It is nowhere near where we should be, and we cannot run away from that and give any excuses. We are not delivering at the rate that we should be delivering, and without giving any excuses, I think we have tried to allude to the challenges that we are facing. You will see that on the second row from the bottom, we have not rolled out as we had targeted previously. And the challenges is that we've had to now go on this process of getting the framework agreement in place. And that is what has taken us longer, but
that has since been resolved, and we can now, in terms of our plans, complete the rollout of the 140 that we had intended doing, as well as the 150 that has to have been being implemented as we currently say. I'm not sure if I've answered Honourable Member. Okay, and then in terms of internal processes that are a problem, I can't remember what that was about, but I think, yes, I think I know about the PSU. Program support unit is made of private companies, the consultants, and therefore our consultants, they cannot be involved in terms of procurement processes. And as we alluded in the beginning, is that the structure of the DBE is not such that, for example, the people in our procurement are they are not infrastructure people. And those are some of the internal processes that we need to look at, because once we terminate IAs, we need to start procuring as the department, and that is the process that we need to get right.
If I could add that in this administration, the ministers started a reorganization of the structure of the department. I mean, for the first presentation on the quarterly report, we talked of the five, and this CD unit basically belongs to Program 4. The minister actually requested us to set up a branch totally dedicated to infrastructure with its own DDG. As well as recently in our discussions, is that even with some of the issues related to some of the implementing agents, the business that we have actually have to do the work of the implementing agent. So we're actually paying for somebody that's not doing it. So we even will look at how to expand numbers of people so that we actually can do the implementing agent role in some respects by that branch itself. So this is in the process as well, that actually if you do the sums as well, the fees that you're paying to the implementing agent alone may cover the cost of the size of the people that you're looking for, as well as could lead to some savings which can be really directed into the infrastructure.
Okay, and then there was a question about massage. I'm not sure about the fixing of prices, but what I know is what it has done is that you find that contractors are waiting for the same supply of material from the same supplier, and therefore what this has done is that we have to look at other ways of perhaps not relying on this particular resource, and that is why we have also looked at alternative construction technologies so that we widen our options there. The sporting facility, I have alluded to that. But also in terms of universal access, our schools may not be having sporting facilities, but we make sure that they are accessible to people with disabilities. We provide ramps and yeah. Okay. On Eastern Cape, there is generally a concern to say, what are you doing about the implementing agents that are not performing? What measures has the department taken? There was also an issue in terms of what are we doing with the contracts. We have tried to put more clauses in our contracts to make sure that it helps us enforce compliance by our implementing agents. And by no means are we taking, we not taking accountability on all of this. But we also, at the same time, let me just say, in terms of IDT, as well as Free State Education Department, who is our implementing agent, we are following the provisions of the agreements that we have with them. We have issued them with the final intention to terminate, you know, and we realize that it might delay us even further. But I think honorable members are correct. We must be seen, and we must show that we are serious about this terminating the contract. And those are the processes that we are following. And then there was another comment. I think it was about us having a task team investigating. And I think that particular slide was talking about alternative construction technologies, because what the minister has said is that, you know, what we need to do is to establish norms and standards in terms of what ABT, alternative building technologies are there, and therefore it would not have been right to just pick and choose which technologies we can choose, and therefore the task team was established to make sure that we go out in the market and see what is there and check if it's acceptable with the department. So that is the process that we engaged on. If another question to say on what on page
Clarify, they are still investigating alternative methods. I'm worried about this because since 2012, the Department of Public Works through IGT, they were using those alternative methods in the schools in Eastern Cape. We once visited those schools, they are outstanding. So now, if you don't plan together with the people that you are working with, I think you'll go back and investigate why it's in progress. That's why maybe it's like that we are not moving fast on the implementation of that one. But we're still investigating alternative methods. Whereas in 2012, they started implementing it. It's working in the schools in the Eastern Cape. They've been done through the particular alternative methods. Maybe you have to talk to your colleagues in Public Works and IDT.
Okay. Honourable Member, we are aware of that particular process. And in fact, we are not waiting for the investigation. We are continuing some of the schools we are implementing using alternative building technology. And what I'm talking about here is that there has to be, Honourable Members talked about the policies and all of that. So that is what we are going to say, where we are going to build alternative, with alternative technologies, what are the minimum requirements and all of that. So that is by no means a delaying process. And the process that Public Works, okay, Mr. Nafuku will talk more to that. I think they were, I'm not sure what exactly they were looking at, but here we want to focus on what should be at the schools in terms of alternative construction technology.
I just wanted to comment on the issue of alternative technology and maybe just to indicate why this report is on RPD. There is what we refer to as the Provincial Infrastructure Program, where the provinces are implementing using the EIG. Now, in the Provincial Infrastructure Program, there are hundreds of schools that are currently being implemented already using alternative technologies. So that process is already continuing, including the project that Honourable Member is referring to in the Eastern Cape. However, we need to indicate that even some of those projects that were implemented by Public Works in 2010, some of the technologies that were implemented are already falling apart. Some are extremely good, some are not necessarily that good. So there needs to be an ongoing studies and evaluation of those alternative technology methods. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Chair. Can I just follow up on that? Yes, yeah. My concern is that alternative method using, if you're using contractors, first of all, I don't know if we are that wrong, but is it not costing us a lot of money? Is it not a waste of resources if we haven't perfected the mechanism or the system or what we're using? Now we are using it and now we are finding that they're collapsing. And I mean, you're going to start all over again. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, in my experience, whatever you can put on a contract, on a piece of document, does not prevent, you know, if contract is not performing and you say you'll take over the school. It does not become so simple, because as long as there's a law, I can tell you that it can go on for 2 years, 3 years, and 4 years. I know of a contractor who's built houses. Every house has collapsed. The ground around it has collapsed. He's to build houses. He's gone to court. He's something. So I'm not sure whether the legal document that you have is going to help, and to what extent, you know, you have gone in trying to cover that from a legal point of view. But at the end of the day, all this seems to impact on the service delivery or on the. A problem that I seem to find, What we're doing is we are putting up buildings. And that is what my only concern is. What I want to see is schools. There's a difference between schools for me and buildings. And I'm not seeing schools. I'm not hearing schools. I'm hearing buildings. Really, that is what I'm hearing. Thank you.
The other part of it relating to the point you were making about collapsing, some of the collapses, is how you then interact with the South African Bureau of Standards so that they check on all of that, so that you don't build and then we say hooray 2 years down the line you're down on the ground. So you need to play around that as well. Thank you.
No, in 2010 it was not an alternative method. It was the contractors that were not experienced that were giving the work. The alternative method started as the chair correctly indicated, say the South African Bureau of Standards. They requested the approval of it from 2011 and then it started in 2012. Maybe if you can share with us whether those schools that were built through alternative technology is those schools that are falling apart. Because also what it says is saying to say that we have to check with the South African Bureau of Standards whether even the material, because we started doing oversight on the 2010, the one that we built, you know, see that people are not experienced, but they were building schools and they were falling apart and they came up with this thing to try and attempt to cover because those schools were falling apart. Maybe, I don't know whether it was through alternative technology, but I don't think it's the one because it started in 2012.
Yes, ma'am, I want to follow up and before you...
So you say at the DG, just to explain the process in as far as IDT is concerned and the oversight of the Department of Public Works, all contractors that were, in fact, not contractors per se, it's the alternative contracting technologies certificate holder. They are certified by AGREMA, which is an institution that is trained to certify non-standardized products. So all of them, they were certified. What happened is that they are not contractors. They actually build the structure. But a contractor is held to be licensed as well to be able to put the structure on the ground. I don't have the information at this point in my disposal as to whether those or some of those structures collapsed. But what I know is that they were complete structures, they were certified by the certificate holder. At the end of the whole process, has to make sure that they go and see and certify the structure. What we are doing now, and I think the fact that the Department of Basic Education is doing, we have to keep looking at improving the process. Some people argue that in actual fact, when you use alternative construction technologies, you are supposed to have a pay solution because you get a professional service provider that goes and assess the school. In actual fact, they cannot complete the design without knowing the type of technology that is going to be used. There's a difference between various types of technologies. You cannot design without knowing exactly which one you are going to use because it depends on the sense of the technology and various other things. But hence, we continue all of us that are involved in infrastructure. We continue investigating this. But it does mean the schools that have been built, they are questionable. It may be something else that is related to construction, but not to the technology itself. Thanks.
Okay, I'll be very quick. There was another question to say there was a target to complete the school in August. Has it been done or not? Yes, it has been completed at a particular school. And well, I'm going to give the acting DG to answer some of the questions. But maybe before I give over to him, is honorable members, in terms of the security at the schools, there is the process that we do social facilitation.
where we involve the SGBs and everyone. And I will be called to order if I'm out of order, but I really believe that the communities should take charge of those particular schools. So we do facilitate that they do that, and I think if the committee, there's one thing they can do for us is to make sure that the communities look after the schools once they are done.
The issue of maintenance of schools is one of the most critical issues that we're looking at currently, and the minister has charged that we currently have what he referred to as guidelines that provinces use in the maintenance of schools, and we are currently converting those guidelines into regulations so that they have force in law. And also what we have done is the provinces, because we have 27,000 schools that are already in place that have to be maintained, and they are in the realm of provinces. So what we have done is that provinces, in their budgeting process, they don't have to budget less than 5% of their infrastructure budget to maintenance. And we are looking at increasing that amount to 10%. And ultimately, the amount of money in the budget that would be allocated to new facilities should be less than the amount budgeted for maintenance, because the majority of our schools need to be maintained. And Chair, just the last one, DG, with the permission, just on the issue of capacity building, and which relates to the matter that was raised by Honourable Member around the AG report about a few years ago. One of the things that we have done from 2010, we have allocated out of education infrastructure grant an amount of 10 million rand per province for the appointment of built environment specialists in every province, meaning your architects, engineers, quantity surveyors, and so on. We have increased that amount to 26 million for each province in the current financial year. To date, the last number that we had is that we have appointed about 133 built environment specialists in the 9 provinces that will be responsible for the monitoring and the implementation of infrastructure projects in provinces. I'm not talking about the DBE. The DBE, we've got the PSU, and then we have spoken about it. So in as far as provinces are concerned, the process is ongoing. And since we started with that program, we have seen tremendous improvement in the management of the infrastructure portfolio in the province as a result of the presence of those built environment specialists. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. If we do not cover all the questions, we will have taken notes, so we will provide the response in writing to the committee in the next 7 days. I think, Chair, some of the questions, let me just go to the one about the AG has raised certain issues which we've looked at over time to strengthen. We even brought, we've added people with expertise, well, not basically infrastructure, to assist in terms of directing some of the issues like providing the necessary accountability mechanisms that the AG is looking for in that regard. So we're working with the AG in trying to improve in those areas. But today is not the time and not the place, but I could share my story about this project. And unfortunately, only when I leave the public service can I raise some of the things. And even my experience in this committee prior to your appointment. I think the issue of schools being built in the right place and so forth is something that we're taking into consideration, and the guidelines that we refer to are now the norms and standards that we are basically utilizing for infrastructure building, and I think that sets up a different type of schools and where it should be provided. But even when, Philippe has referred to the mergers and so forth, there are processes to be followed, but in terms of service delivery, it cannot take 2 to 3 years to go on, because children continue to utilize these poor facilities that are there, which are basically substandard. That even on our side, we will need in the next few months, irrespective of our discussion with the province as well, to make decisions. And I always use this one example that when we started a project and as children have been using an entire mud school, the minute we've done the decanting, we've already improved their lives by taking them out of the mud. That doesn't mean that we must not go and complete the school. But they're already in a better facility than they were. So, you cannot say it takes 3 years to finalize. We need to build our education, and we need to be there are children like every other child in the rest of the country. So I think those are some of the things in the next few weeks and months that we're looking at. I think on the spot field, if I may say this, that what we've said in terms of the norms is that it's a basic level of provision, either a soccer field which is 100 by 50 and a netball. If that is the land is available, that can be provided. If it's not, I think in some instances they've been shortened. I've even seen where the field goes from, you know, on the slope and calling it a soccer field. But that's what we've provided in terms of what the DORA and the grant allows us. But that's basically what it is there. But we've discussed other, I mean, we've seen the state-of-the-art sports facilities with solar floodlights and artificial turf and so on. That comes in at about $2 million, which can be provided, but maybe not just for each school, but it would have to be a combination of schools as well, where it can be done. There are things that we can do. But to answer also, Honorable Chair, these other issues of libraries, in these schools, they're not just buildings. They are complete, and if the minister and the deputy minister, they would be called state-of-the-art. And even the 49, the enrollment has maybe around 135 to 200. The population may not grow in those villages, but if you do go there, when the schools are handed over or you visit, you will know, I don't mind sitting in this committee and being eaten up. Because when you are there and you see those children get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to just come to have that being handed over, or for the school to take a decision to provide that they change the uniform so they have new things, then even though they don't have the money for the uniform, that means we made a difference to their life. And it's just not those... you know, the other aspects are also provided. And infrastructure people, we just stop short of providing the teacher. But as a branch head, I've actually looked into that. In some schools, I've asked my other colleagues who are responsible for that to look at that. But I still have, you know, they haven't come up in all respects to provide a school with all those teachers in the Eastern Cape. But in some instances, those schools who may not have had that have got that. That's basically the complete solution. But in terms of the definition, all of those are not necessarily infrastructure. I don't want to go on record say anything today and maybe using a disciplinary hearing against me as an accounting officer. But and I've got my colleague Spencer here as well, who may come back, who's written something about the question that, well, not him, but Treasury, about some of the things that the chair has raised that we had requested to maybe look at in funding in, as part of this. But that, those issues are not going to go away. You know, there are even bridges where children are crossing rivers and so forth, which we are not covered by the grant, but we need to look at. And even putting up one bridge, it just doesn't change the lives of those children who go to school. It changes the lives of the community around there. There are people who probably don't see each other until the Sunday when they go to church. But now when you just put that footbridge, it's just not the children that are crossing those rivers. I think on the capacity, we've made provision. We're basically better off than where we were 5 years ago. We've got approximately over 130 that people we did not have to assist from to the departments, as well as to work with us. It's more if you add that. But there's certain provinces where some of these professionals are not prepared to go and work because people want to work in Gauteng or around the metropolitan areas and so forth. But they are we are looking at ways of how to overcome those. And sometimes maybe it's necessary to look at getting them as they leave the institutions, even before they've started the career, to give young people a chance. So clearly the program, not just the CD, but infrastructure in general, in-school infrastructure, there are a number of opportunities, job creation, start improving the lives of our learners as well. It can make a difference for community as well. But in the end, we also have our colleague in the previous committee. We were asked to look at how to beef up our communication because work was being done, but it seemed like nothing was happening. So together with the departmental communication, we've gone out. You would have seen maybe a CD advert as well. But clearly, in the area we've succeeded, people believe that we need to do more, which means even considering building that role. But we're not allowed as a department. The other is the department. I think one honorable member just say that, you know, it's about delivery of education and core, and when it's really the Department of Basic Education's job. But, and to comment on what the mandate of the other departments. If these departments were giving, you know, providing the water and sanitation, we'd probably say, no, it's not our business, let's leave it. But the minister you know, is that a person that even if she's accused of not delivering in certain things, she will not run away from the problem, and therefore, as her officials, we have to back up and get it over there, whether it's within the mandate of education or not. So I think even in the issue of Kuruman now, it's not education that's the issue that stops schools. It's a road, and not even the road that's really the problem. If we knew that it was a road and we could still get schooling tomorrow, I think I don't mind that if I get fired and get that back done, we'll build that road in that instance. So I think what we've done, we're doing much better than 2 to 3 years ago, and the momentum is there, and we just need to build on it. Because the money is one issue, but if the plans and the details of executing it are in place, the money will take care of itself. And one of the things I've indicated is that I will not authorize or put my signature to somebody who has not given us anything. That we will not pay somebody where we cannot find the school. You can go to wherever we pay people, you'll find a delivered product, including a toilet or water provision. And if a contractor is not paid and he doesn't want his money, we are not going to run to them at the department to say, can take your money. I know that in terms of accounting procedure, we should make sure we close the books and so forth. But if the children are getting the service, that's our priority.
That's not for that.
Some comments?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Very briefly, I think we also want to say that we applaud the improvement that we've seen in this program in the past year or so, but it is nowhere near where it should be. I mean, 70% expenditure is not wonderful, but it is a lot better than the 10% of 2-3 years ago. One of the problems that the committee did recommend and comment on was the issue of capacity in the department to provide support and monitoring and oversight for this project. And the department has been given an allocation of just under 100 million over the MTF, the current MTF, for that capacity. So we certainly expect the support and monitoring and planning that the acting DG was referring to also to improve the delivery and expenditure. And then just lastly, on the matters relating or challenges relating to procurement issues within the department, the comments around the internal functions and some of the problems that that's related to, just to say that the office of the Chief Procurement Officer in the National Treasury is available to provide assistance on all matters related to procurement, where the need arises. So, I mean, that offer stands as a general offer to departments and all that. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Just to conclude, I do want to say that the...
Before you conclude,
yes.
We did not hear the escalation call. But if Mr. Jones respond on it now, do it on writing for the people.
We just confirmed that, as the SCDG said, whatever they've not answered, they will do so in writing. We would like to have that. Thank you very much. Yes.
All my questions were not answered. If I can get that response in writing.
Okay. Let's just agree that all questions that have not been answered, now we will get them in writing. I was saying that as the Standing Committee on Appropriations, we take the view that says that once we have passed the appropriation bill and funds are appropriated to departments, we would want to follow the money and see whether the money is performing and achieving what it is supposed to achieve. We would want to assist in unlocking the blockages in terms of the department's ability to perform and spend the money. We would want to assist in identifying possible wastages early enough so that we can do together the corrective measure. At the end of the day,
and the department must deliver to our people with no wastage, no maladministration, no fraud and corruption. That's where we stand in this committee. So that we don't come back and point fingers and criticize and say all sorts of negative things when we have not assisted proactively on issues related to spending the funds that are appropriated to the department, all of them. We will follow the projects in some cases and see that they are being delivered timely, the money is spent appropriately, and so on. And that is why we raise all of these main issues that we have raised. We will interact with yourselves from time to time, as we will do with all other departments who are receiving funds from the state, so that we ensure that at the end of the day, our people can say, this government is delivering. Appreciate the information that we've got now. The National Treasury confirms that the level of success can already be seen. Improve on that and so that we can conclude and say our people are receiving education in conditions that are conducive, and that their education feeds into the economy of this country. It feeds into the growth and development of the economy of this country. So that their education feeds into building the human capital that this country requires. That's where we stand as this committee. And so we will not call anyone or visit any project to fight negative thought and then begin to criticize. We will try by all means to assist, to facilitate proper spending of this money. That's our job. That's our money. We thank you very much for your attendance, both the Department of Basic Education, Department of Public Works, National Treasury, thank you very much, and everybody else. Member, thank you for your attendance and your participation.
Yes, I was just about to say that we will release our business now so that we can cross the internet business.
Page 2. Page 3.
On page 7.
Yes, Honorable Milok.
The number there. I think from page 2 we've got 4.2, and then on page 3
we
still have 4.2 inside of.
So page 3 should start with 4.3, and then the last page. Adoption.
I propose we adopt the minutes.
Second. Thank you. The minute of the 27th on page 1. Page 2. Just check on page 1 whether your name is written correctly and so on and so on. I know Darren is very good at writing correct names and naming people. And Ms. Hanley here. page 2.
know, sometimes you look at the first page and you see a strange surname, but it looks like yours. You know. Page 3. Yes, one of those. Yeah. Yeah, Lungo?
A second.
A second. Okay. Thank you. We have adopted both sets of limits. Thank you very much, members. The next meeting is on? Yes.
Members, the next committee meeting is next week on Tuesday at 10 a.m. with the Department of Transport on the first court expenditure report. G26 in the National Assembly building.
The notices will reach you in good time. Transport. Okay. Thank you very much, members. The meeting is adjourned.